PANDOT video. Glad you found us here. It is Friday, the 21st of November. Now, as I speak, Trump is meeting with newly crowned mayor of New York. I guess he's probably not even mayor yet, but newly elected mayor of New York, Mamdani. We're going to go to that video. We're going to watch that press conference as it continues live. So you're not going to miss any of that. We're going to do the daily dispatch as we normally do in the first 5 minutes to get the daily headlines out of the way. Then we'll go directly to that press conference. So again, you're not going to miss any of it. We got a huge show for you. BX on X. Becca is here to talk about 764, as well as some bizarre connections between the 764 pedophile satanic network and January 6th, of all things. It's a very fascinating stuff. Then we'll be joined by Tiffany Cianci, who last time she was here, the interview went viral like 10 times over, millions upon millions of views, re-uploaded by some huge accounts because she always brings gold. So we're excited about what she's going to bring here today. We're going to talk about the devilish marriage between private equity and AI and the laws that are being passed right now as we speak, setting up a very dystopian world in the future. So stay tuned for Tiffany Cianci in the third hour. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. So here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 21st of November, 2025. Like I said, as we speak, Mamdani is meeting with President Trump in the Oval Office at the White House. We'll go to that live in just a minute. A lot of people were expecting fireworks, expecting maybe a repeat of Zelensky, where he was sort of humiliated in front of everybody. Instead, we're getting a totally different vibe, a totally different mood, very friendly, very agreeable, very interesting development here. So we'll go to that in just a second. Of course, Axios was writing about this before the meeting, saying what to know about the feud between Mamdani and Donald Trump, which really isn't a feud as much as it is just two incredibly different people with different power levels, you know, in different positions. Feud just doesn't seem like the right word. Feud to me sounds like an even match. This is more like, you know, a mouse going to meet with an elephant, but we'll see anyway, and we'll go back to that in just a second. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer has announced legislation condemning Nick Fuentes by name. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer announced on Thursday that he will introduce a resolution condemning neo-Nazi influencer Nick Fuentes and his white supremacist views after Donald Trump declined to condemn Fuentes or Tucker Carlson platforming of him. This is an amazing honor from Chuck Schumer to Nick Fuentes. I'm jealous personally. This would be the first time ever in the entire 250-year history of the American Congress that they have chosen a certain individual to call out and denounce by name, which just shows you how terrified they are of that, you know, 20-something-year-old kid and his webcam. Really incredible stuff. Meanwhile, DOJ reverses course, says full jury reviewed James Comey indictment. This is a reversal of the reversal. Previously, the Department of Justice and the lead prosecutor, Lindsey Halligan, had told a judge that all jurors were not privy to the final revised document displaying charges against James Comey. But now they've corrected the record and said actually they did. It's all good. We're actually back on track, which is good to see. Again, we'd hate to see James Comey avoid justice by these little technicalities. Very annoying stuff. Meanwhile, U.S. demands Ukraine sign peace deal by Thanksgiving or else. Ukraine is under pressure from the Trump administration to sign a peace deal by Thanksgiving Thursday or face a loss of intelligence sharing as well as weapons. Army Secretary Dan Driscoll presented the plan to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, which states that should Ukraine not comply, they will see an end to the intelligence sharing and weapons deliveries. We'll get back into this later. And it's basically cutting out the EU entirely. They're not happy about it, but they have no leverage to say anything. Finally, we have this. Andy Ngo reports, first Antifa terrorism convictions in U.S. history, 5 far-left extremists have admitted to being Antifa members and terrorists in federal plea deals stemming from a coordinated ambush shooting on U.S. Customs and Immigration Enforcement facility on the 4th of July. So the first terrorist convictions for the Antifa terror group. Very good to see. 5 down, 10,000 to go. That's your Daily Dispatch brought to you, of course, by thealexjonesstore.com. Right now, the Black Friday came early sales, absolutely massive. Buy one supplement, get one free, plus 25% off all apparel. Massive discounts on some of our best-selling products. Do your Christmas shopping now at thealexjonesstore.com.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I am not funded by millionaires. I'm not funded by anybody but you. And I am in the middle of a major deep state battle. We've been globalists. We have shortfalls, and we need your support. So just go get a T-shirt. Go get a ball cap. Get the ultramethylene blue. Get the Irish sea moss. And so you just commit to support us. Sign up for auto ship. Get 50% off. You can cancel any time. It's not like a full commitment like you marry somebody. You can just subscribe to it or order it once. When you get it and love it, go subscribe. And then cancel any time for free. But that way you get it every month or every 2 months, however you set it. And then you know, just boom, 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 you support us. That way you don't have to worry about it each time. I need people to commit to this fight like 1/100th what I've committed. I'm not bitching, but we're changing the world.
The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You can follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. Follow Alex at Real Alex Jones. Follow us at InfoWars and War Room Show. We're going to go live now. Actually, we're backed up a little bit because we don't want you to miss anything. I know Alex ended his broadcast about 5 minutes ago, so we're going to pick it up there with the discussion between newly elected mayor of New York, Zohran Mamdani, and president of the United States, Donald Trump. A lot of people expecting fireworks here. They sort of tricked the press. People thought Mamdani was showing up late, maybe showing disrespect. Turns out they snuck him in the back door and actually had been meeting for a little bit before the public meeting. And it's been extremely friendly, overly friendly, I'd say. This is a very interesting tactic. If you were watching Alex Jones Show, you know Alex was sort of blindsided by this and going, you know, this is actually really smart. If he goes against Zohran Mamdani, it really lets Zohran Mamdani act like the victim and act like everything he's doing is standing up to Trump by aligning himself to Zohran Mamdani. He sends a completely different signal. Let's go back to this footage from the White House, the Oval Office, and we'll comment. I know there's some good questions being asked. Let's watch now.
Go up. He wants to see a lot of houses created, a lot of apartments built, etc. And, you know, people would be shocked, but I want to see the same thing.
Mr. Long, how many anti-Israel protesters?
Jack?
I want to know, one of the policies as well that Mayor-elect Mamdani talked a number of times about on the campaign was shifting the tax burden for property taxes from what he called minority communities to white-based communities and putting more taxes on white people. I also noticed that in your acceptance speech you didn't mention anything about America or Christians or white people in general, and so I didn't know if that was one of the policies that you guys had spoken
Jack
about.
We focused on affordability. We focused on the cost of living crisis. What I will say is that I am very much interested in property tax reform because what we see right now in New York City is a system that is so inequitable that it can't even stand up in court. And the president and I spoke about the importance of not only building more housing, but also making sure that regulation of housing is something that is manageable to actually get through and not the cause of yet another weight that we see.
But to be clear, you're continuing this idea of race-based property taxes.
No, to be very clear,
what you said.
The use of the term was a description of neighborhoods, not a description of intent.
So you intend to tax the whiter neighborhoods more?
No, we intend to create a fair property tax system because we want a New York City that is not only fair and equitable, but also one that every New Yorker can afford.
That's Mamdani answering a question from Jack Posobiec about his targeting of white neighborhoods. He completely sidesteps and avoids the question, which was obviously, you know, the racial implications were overt and obvious, but you know, doesn't want to be confronted with those, so he starts rambling about property taxes. It's obvious he hates white people. It's not that complicated. Nobody else would be able to get away with this. Let's go back.
Whether it's cut off or just make it a little bit difficult or not give as much, we want to see. I use the term. We don't want good money going after bad, and we don't want that to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I did say that, you know, subject to what policies are being said. We had a meeting today that actually surprised me. He wants to see no crime. He wants to see housing being built. He wants to see rents coming down, all things that I agree with. Now, we may disagree how we get there, the rent coming down. I think one of the things I really gleaned very, very much today, he'd like to see them come down ideally by building a lot of additional housing. Yeah. That's the ultimate way. He agrees with that, and so do I. But if I read the newspapers and the stories, I don't hear that. But I heard him say it today, and I think that's a very positive step. No, I don't expect, I expect to be helping him, not hurting him. A big help, because I want New York City to be great. Look, I love New York City. It's where I come from. I spent a lot of years there. Now I'm right here. We took a big setback with a mayor that we had, Dame de Blasio. I thought it was a tremendous setback for the city. I think this mayor can do some things that are going to be really great.
Mr. President, I'm the president.
Okay, how about you? Go ahead,
you,
please.
You're a billionaire. You have a different address nowadays than you used to. But you used to call New York City home. Would you feel comfortable living in New York City under a Mamdani administration?
Yeah, I would. I really would. Especially after the meeting. Absolutely.
What makes you comfortable?
We agree on a lot more than I would have thought. I think he's, I want him to do a great job, and we'll help him do a great job. You know, he may have different views, but in many ways, you know, we were discussing when Bernie Sanders was out of the race, I picked up a lot of his votes, and people had no idea, because he was strong on not getting ripped off in trade and lots of the things that I've practiced and been very successful on, tariffs, a lot of things. Bernie Sanders and I agreed on much more than people thought, and when he was put out of the race, I think quite unfairly, if you want to know the truth, many of the Bernie Sanders voters voted for me. And I felt very comfortable, frankly, in seeing that and saying that. And, you know, it just turned out to be a statistical truth. But, no, I feel very comfortable. I would feel very, very comfortable being in New York, and I think much more so after the meeting. Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a question for you, but a very quick one for the mayor. Why did you fly here? Aren't trains greener?
I'll use every form of transit, and I want to make sure that they're all affordable in New York City, and that's why making buses fast and free is a centerpiece of our campaign.
What a cheesy question.
Well, I know, but it'd be fluid. That's a lot quicker, too. You know, I mean, he's working very hard for him to be. That's a very long drive. I'll stick up for you. You know, the plane takes you 30 minutes, and driving takes you a long time.
Mr. President, I was wondering if you could clear up some confusion around a Washington Post report. There was this explosive report that the Coast Guard is no longer going to characterize swastikas and nooses as hate symbols. DHS called that a lie and fake news. Can you clear up?
I don't know anything about it. When was this written?
Yesterday?
Well, look, the Coast Guard's an incredible group of people. I know them very well. We just ordered a lot of new Coast Guard cutters. Beautiful, the most magnificent ship. They look like yachts with lots of guns on them. So I don't know. I haven't seen any report like that. But certainly we want them to remain a great force, and they are.
And all the 9 months
around
the world. I would like to ask Mr. Mamdani, you accused the U.S. government of committing genocide in Gaza while President Trump was working on peace. Why that?
I've spoken about the Israeli government committing genocide, and I've spoken about our government funding it. And I shared with the president in our meeting about the concern that many New Yorkers have of wanting their tax dollars to go towards the benefit of New Yorkers and their ability to afford basic dignity. And what we see right now is we're in the 9th consecutive year of more than 100,000 school children being homeless in our city. And there's a desperate need not only for the following of human rights, but also the following through on the promises we've made New Yorkers. And I appreciated the meeting we had and the work that we can do.
Do you agree that President Trump didn't do a peace and work hard to make the peace? Because he worked hard to do the peace in the Middle East and everywhere. Do you agree with that?
I appreciate all efforts towards peace, and I shared with President Trump that when I spoke to Trump voters on Hillside Avenue, including one of whom was a pharmacist that spoke about how President Trump's father actually went to that pharmacy not too far from Jamaica Estates, that people were tired of seeing our tax dollars fund endless wars. And I also believe that we have to follow through on the international human rights, and I know that still today those are being violated, and that continues to be work that has to be done no matter where we're speaking of.
Thank you, Mr. President. Do you view the mayor-elect as the true leader of the Democrat Party? And do you think that she was a leader, Jeffrey, as you know, have to follow his lead?
Well, look, I hope they have great leaders. This is a man that right now I think is focused on New York City. I really think he has a chance to do a great job. We're going to help him. But I really think he has a chance to do a great job. But
I'll let you answer that. You consider yourself
the leader of the Democrats. I think it's more appropriate for him.
I consider myself the next mayor of New York City, and I keep my horizons firmly on New York City. And I appreciate the meeting with the president, which focused again on the five boroughs and whether New Yorkers could afford to live there.
By the way, being the mayor of New York City is a big deal. I always said, you know, one of the things I would love to be someday is the mayor of New York City. Being the mayor of New York, and especially now, because I think you're at a turning point, one way or the other. It could go great, or it can go in a different direction. And I think you really have a chance to make it great.
Mr. President, you say you love New York City. Mr. Mamdani, does New York City love President Trump?
New York City loves a future that is affordable. And I can tell you that there were more New Yorkers who voted for President Trump in the most recent presidential election because of that focus on cost of living. And I'm looking forward to working together to deliver on that affordability agenda.
I got a lot of votes. One more. Go ahead. One or two more. Go ahead.
I tell you,
the press has eaten this thing up. You know, I've had a lot of meetings with the heads of major countries. Nobody cared. This meeting, that you people have gone, you know, outside you have hundreds of people waiting. This is just a small little group. For some reason, the press has found this to be a very interesting meeting. The biggest people in the world, they come over from countries nobody cares. But they did care about this meeting, and it was a great meeting. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. President, I was going to ask you exactly that. Why do you think there's so much more, you know, so much excitement around this thing in some form?
Because I think he's different. All right? I think he's different. And that can be in a very positive way. But I think he's different than, you know, your typical guy runs, wins, becomes mayor maybe, and nothing exciting. Because he has a chance to really do something great for New York. New York is at a very critical point. And he does need the help of the federal government to really succeed. And we're going to be helping him. But he's different than, you know, your average candidate. Hey, he came out of nowhere. I said, he has a great campaign manager standing over there. He came out of nowhere. What, you start off at one or two? And then I watched. I said, who is this guy? He was at one. Then he was at three, then he was at five, then he was at nine. Then he went up to 17. I said, that's going to be a little bit interesting, right? And then all of a sudden he wins a primary that nobody expected he was going to win. It's a great tribute. I mean, it's an amazing thing that he did.
And I'll just add one thing to what the president said. Is one thing I also appreciated is in our meeting to appreciate a portrait of FDR and the incredible work that was done with the New Deal and also in thinking about what it can look like when the federal government and New York City government work together to deliver on affordability.
This is very interesting. So again, we're watching live here to the meeting between Trump and Mamdani. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out why it is. Like, obviously Trump's happy about all the attention this is bringing. He seems like he's in like a very good mood right here. And I wonder if this isn't a, enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of thing. I think he recognizes Ron Mamdani's ability to sort of disrupt the traditional Democrat Party. Yeah, he looked at Mamdani and sort of gave a smirk when he was asked about who's the leader of the Democrat Party is, if it's Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi. And obviously they're very terrified of the, you know, rising swell of Democratic socialists that are taking charge. Also, Trump obviously loves New York. And I think there he said he still harbors a dream of being mayor of New York. So this might be a sort of down the line planning thing where he's like, hey, once I'm done being president, maybe I'll be mayor of New York. So he wants to put on a good show for that. It is a little bit odd in the way that Zoran Mamdani is very genuinely everything Trump is against. Like, it's socialist, hates white people, hates rich people. It's probably going to destroy New York, all things Trump is and loves. So that's kind of weird. And it's weird how he's sort of showering him with praise and talking about how wonderful he is. Zoran Mamdani became a citizen 6 years ago. He's a foreign element. He's a immigrant. He is a socialist. Like, everything Trump is supposed to be against, and yet he is treating him so nicely when somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene is on his crap list and is, constantly the subject of abuse from Trump. It's kind of like, well, it really is better to be against Trump if you want to, like, be friends with him. If you are everything he hates, he'll be your best friend. But if you support him endlessly, he'll sort of throw you under the bus at any moment. It's a little bit confusing to me. I don't personally understand this political trajectory. And I wonder if maybe just like, you know, he likes Mamdani because Chuck Schumer hates Mamdani. I wonder if he likes Zoran Mamdani because Benjamin Netanyahu hates Zoran Mamdani. I wonder if these things have anything to do with it. As we've been reporting for the entirety of Trump's second administration, there is a shadow war going on between the Trump administration and Israel. And as much as they seem to love Israel and do everything for them, if you look for it, you'll see the conflict underneath the surface there. So I wonder if that's not a signal Trump is sending. I'm just trying to figure out what's behind Trump's seemingly, buoyant embrace of Zoran Mamdani. We'll go back here. And they'll end this conversation soon, and then apparently Trump's going to come back out, so we'll keep an eye on it. But let's go back now to the questioning.
Rational person. I met with a man who really wants to see New York be great again. And I can say again, because New York was great. You know, when I came down to Washington initially, the city was so hot. It was doing great. We were having some telltale signs of problems. We had a mayor that was not doing a great job, but still, it was moving along. And it went bad. It really went, pretty bad. And I think it's been at lower points, but it went pretty bad. I think he can bring it back. Now, the question is, will he bring it back all the way? Will he bring it back greater than ever before? Which is, I guarantee, that's his wish. I think he wants to make it greater than ever before. And if he can, we'll be out there cheering. I'll be cheering for him. Okay? Thank you very much, everybody.
All right, so there's the end. Get a lot of glad-handing. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell, what the real feelings are here. After all, like I said, Mamdani really is sort of everything. He represents everything Trump is against politically, socialism, immigration, all these sorts of things. Israel, would be another, point of contention there, point of difference. But he treats him so nicely. Alex was saying this, how brilliant this is. I get that perspective. But on the other hand, I'm still confused. I'm still confused at this a little bit. And, I know the right wing does it too, but the left wing is very, very, very willing to lie about everything. And I know we know this, but it's concerning when Trump, oh man, Donnie's got all these great ideas. He's gonna, implement this stuff. It's gonna be really great. And it's like, okay, but he thinks you're a fascist. He's not going to cooperate with ICE. He's going to cooperate even less with ICE than New York is even doing now. He obviously wants a totally unfair tax structure in which the most successful in the world are punished for it. There's these weird kind of things that don't solve problems but are trying to put a Band-Aid on it. Like right now, it's pretty much impossible. It's prohibitively expensive to make your way through the regulations to start a business in New York. And so he's starting a whole new branch of the government being funded for $20 million to help small businesses navigate the regulations. So it's like instead of cutting the regulations, they're creating a new branch of government, a new office to handle. So they built an impossibly complicated maze, and now they're creating a new form of government or new whatever office to help people navigate the maze they built. Why don't you just undo the maze so it's not so difficult anymore? So a lot of these issues that I don't think are going to help New York at all. And I understand how Trump just wants to help New York. I think he genuinely loves New York. And I think he, especially before he got into politics, was closely associated with New York. And I feel like he has not enjoyed the way they treat him, or that he's not, headquartered there anymore. I think his identity is really tied up in New York City, so he's just going to do what he thinks is best for the city, no matter what. And I've said before, I think that there's enough people recognize that Zoran Mamdani becoming mayor of New York is a test that a lot of people are going to be watching to see how socialism fares in America, in the city that capitalism built. And if it does well, then it's likely that a whole bunch of other cities will go socialist. And so there's a very big incentive for billionaires who are socialist, or, people with their hands on billions of dollars of government funds, to make it look like it's succeeding no matter what. So I think sort of no matter what, New York is going to be fine, because even if, you know, they implement these things that cause budget shortfalls, I think those will be patched in by people with, you know, infinite money and a desire to see socialism presented as a success. So I think Trump is kind of contributing to that. And in a way, I think it's very dangerous to be helping out the Democratic Socialist appear successful, because you're just going to lead to more success for Democratic Socialists down the line, not because the policies are actually successful, because they've been artificially propped up and supported by international billionaires that want to see America go socialist, because that's an easy way to sort of combine all these different power structures into a governmental power structure. So you only have to control one organization rather than a whole bunch of separate ones. So I would have rather seen Trump be a little bit harsher, I guess. And it just, I don't know, I just, the whole dishonest nature of politics just grinds my gears, gets on my nerves. I don't like seeing Ma'am Donnie say Trump's a fascist and a bigot, and then get in his office and say, well, no, you know, I think people really like Trump, and he, you know, people like affordability. And it's just, it's all so gross and sort of backhanded and underhanded and deceitful. I find it all disgusting, but I guess that's how politics is played. Actually, again, it's just weird when you have, you know, Donald Trump writing screeds demonizing Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene, but he's like loving on the Democratic Socialist who specifically says we're going to tax white people. It's just like, I don't like it. I don't like it, I have to be honest with you. But again, I wonder if he's not doing it to piss off people that he hates. Trump really getting a lot of trouble from the Democrats in Congress, and he knows that their biggest challenger and the biggest threat to them at this point are the Democratic Socialists that are rising up in the party. So that may be some of the calculus that's going on. Now, apparently there's going to be another speech from Ma'am Donnie. Trump might come out. We don't really know. We'll keep an eye on it. The crew's watching it in the back. So if something interesting happens, we'll certainly go to that live. BX on X is going to join me here in studio later. Again, it's like, you know, these two guys build their careers demonizing the very people that they're now glad-handing with. I just find it dishonest. Like, Ma'am Donnie, who does he hate? White people, capitalists, billionaires, and Donald Trump. Who does Donald Trump dislike? Immigrants, socialists, you know, radical Muslims. And it's like, okay, but they're best friends. Great. This is very confusing. This is very confusing. And maybe we'll go to some videos later to illustrate the true levels of dishonesty that really it's Democrats in particular are constantly sinking to. And like, this sort of is ubiquitous. And it's like, do people not know that people can be nice to you when they think they need something from you? Like, there was a guy that was sort of the original organizer of the Muslim march before Jake Lang took it over. And, you know, he's out there going, I came here expecting to be hated, but I was welcomed and these people treated me so nicely. And it's like, yeah, because they are tricking you. Like, it's not that complicated. They're wooing you. They're acting all nice and friendly, so you'll go out and say this. Meanwhile, for the last 5 months, the poor citizens of the town have been going to the mayor saying, hey, you're playing the call to prayer at 5 a.m. and it's against city ordinances, and we've been complaining for months, and nobody will do anything about it. And they're just like, yeah, well, you know, tough luck. We'll look into it. Come back 5 months from now. Just like constant abuse and disrespect from, you know, official positions of power. But then when the opposition comes in, it's all, oh, come on in. We love you. Come, we'll welcome you. We're so nice. And then they, you know, act like they're nice. It's like they're just tricking you. You guys, don't fall for it. Why are we falling for this?
I'm making this announcement on Friday, November 21st, 2025. And this is the biggest sale in the history of our sponsor, Bigly, thealexjonesstore.com, with the very best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel. Right now, until next Friday, you can get any of the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, the bovine colostrum, and they're all the best, the turmeric, the list goes on and on, where you get one bottle of whatever supplement you want, and then you can pick any other supplement you want. So you can buy a supplement that costs way less than one of the other supplements and get that even more expensive, more, quote, high-end product that has more ingredients free with it. This is a massive deal. And every day we're running flash sales that change each day on top of it. We're doing this because we know a lot of you have been on the fence about the products. You've heard the rave reviews. We know if you use them, you're going to love them. You'll be a repeat customer. So some of these are a lost leader. We're also doing it for the fans that have supported us so much so you get a better deal. But bottom line, we're fundraising right now. The bad guys are very close to shutting down InfoWars. They have the state receiver in. They're setting up an auction sometime the next month. I'll imagine it'll be like the federal auction where they don't let good guys try to bid. I'm not accusing of anything wrong yet, but we're just going to see what happens. Let's just say this. I don't have any faith that good guys will keep us on the air to be allowed to bid. So I expect we'll be shut down by the new year. But that's okay because we've got the College Shows Network. We've got all these new systems thanks to your support that have been set up and even more being built. But that's why the support is so critical at thealexreport.com, because it doesn't just fund InfoWars as we fight to stay on the air, but the new infrastructure. So it is critical to take action. And again, I don't own thealexreport.com. I don't own the Alex Jones Network. Bigly does. And so I'm just going to work there and be the news director, and we're going to continue on. And they can attack me till the cows come home, but we are going to continue to fight. The only variable of myself and my crew staying in the fight, because we'll never give up, never back down, never give in. We could give out. Is you supporting us while you get great products at the same time. So now's the time to take action. You see the crescendo of the forces of good versus evil just rising against each other as it always does historically. We're in this major time of change, the fourth turning. The Democrats are calling for open civil war, saying Trump's a tyrant, telling the military not to follow any of his orders. This is a time we need to stay on the air. Whether it's InfoWars, the Alex Jones Network, you know the coordinates. You share them everywhere. You take the clips. You take the articles. You take the video links. And that will change the world. But to keep us on air, we need the money so we sell you great products that really work. So it's a symbiotic relationship. Just like a good restaurant wants to have good service, high-quality food at reasonable prices. So you want to come back. There's a line out the door. The restaurant with nobody going in it shuts down because they have crappy service. You've just got to come into our restaurant. You just got to come in and try the Ultra Methylene Blue or the Sea Moss or the other products and see how great it is. And that's why we're saying buy one bottle, get any other bottle you want free, and other huge discounts right now at thealexjonesstore.com. This is the most critical moment in InfoWars 28 years. These are great products, so take action now. Action is the essence of victory. That's why we've come so far together. You're the reason the InfoWars has existed. It will continue on despite a URL because I am the InfoWar. You are the InfoWar. We are the InfoWar. We are telling the truth and taking on their lies and winning. And yeah, they're striking back. And boy, we're in the thick of a big war here, but you can see they're losing. To paraphrase Patton, if you're tired and you're hungry, you've been fighting for days, just know this, the other guy you're fighting is even more tired and more hungry. So punch and fight that much harder in the InfoWar. Take action now. TheAlexJonesStore.com, and God bless you all.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. And before I welcome my guest, I do want to tell you about the Black Friday Came Early sale at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. It's buy one, get one free on all supplements. Any supplement you buy, you get another supplement absolutely free. This sale ends Friday, November 28th. Add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement absolutely free. They're, of course, incredible, plus 25% off apparel. It's an absolutely massive sale. It ends this Friday, November 28th. Visit thealexjonesstore.com today. Fuel your body, mind, and power the InfoWar. And, of course, try some of our incredible products like the Bovine Colostrum Plus. My favorite are the Irish Sea Moss and the Shilajit gummies, as well as the Power Drive combo, which is Power Plant and Methyl Drive. Those are some of my favorite. Go check them out. Highest quality supplements available online, thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, you keep us on the air and getting the incredible guests that we do, like Becca at BX_on_X or at bxrights.substack.com, an independent investigator, streamer, and artist. Her investigations focus on exposing satanic pedophile networks, in the most literal sense of the word, psyops and underreported events. Of course, you can keep track of her on her Substack at bxrights.substack.com, where she posts exclusive, in-depth research. Welcome back to the show, Becca.
Thanks, Harrison. Always happy to be back on your show.
It's always a pleasure. And once again, you're sort of here on a victory tour. We're talking about the headlines yesterday. FBI intensifies crackdown on International 764 Child Exploitation Network. modern-day terrorism, how the online extremist network 764 threatens teen lives. When you first started coming on InfoWars with us on American Journal, nobody knew about this. We hardly knew about it. You were really sort of, you know, paving the way and forging the trail for people looking into this. Now it seems like the FBI is fully involved and making some major strides here. What is the latest with 764?
Well, yeah, the FBI has continued to double down on this on social media and in press conference, you know, doing what I've said that they should do a long time ago, which is pat yourselves on the back more often when you get these guys arrested, because really there's nobody hates when pedophiles get arrested. Right?
It's really
it's a win.
Total victory. Yes.
It's hard to criticize, and they're doing a lot of it. So I wish they would come out even more. And like with every arrest, I wish they would announce it, retweet it. But they've been coming out a lot lately and making these making announcements on these arrests. And there's been quite a few. There've been quite a few interesting ones. Like there was one that was just announced the other day. This kid was actually, I say kid, I think he was like 24 or something, but he was actually planning to go join ISIS and then come back and commit a terror attack. And he'd been planning and purchasing items to go commit a shooting or a bombing, which is probably the first ISIS link I've ever seen in this group. So it's really shows you how broad this whole thing is and how it's escalating.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, the FBI is sort of desperate for wins right now. There's so much scrutiny on them. And this is a total home run. It's literal pedophile networks. And, you know, on top of that, not just letting people know, like, okay, we're doing stuff, we're hunting these people down, but letting parents know, like, this is what is happening to kids online. So I think every arrest needs to be a news story, if for no other reason than to make parents aware of what's going on.
Very important. And I think that's been my whole thing as a mom. Getting involved in this was not something I ever expected to happen to me. But once I saw it, I was like, I can't believe this is happening and no one's talking about it. Like, I'm compelled to keep talking about it until people start paying attention. Because I feel like every parent that's reached is a possible life saved. I think there really is a disconnect in this generation of parents where they don't understand that their kids are being preyed on online. And the more parents we get aware of that, the better. And the sooner we can bring awareness to that, the better.
It really is insane. As somebody with kids, the idea that you would give your kid unfettered or unmonitored access to any aspect of the internet is just mind blowing to me. But I know people that, like, their kids are like 4 years old and the parents like, you know, maybe I should put a something on the YouTube app so they only watch kid stuff. And it's like, yeah, dude, you should. Like, what is wrong with you?
The YouTube rabbit hole is crazy. If you get your kids off of that, it'll send them on like a torpedo path to like radicalization. They'll be listening to Combat Nasheed Roblox channels in no time. Like,
so it's like so strange that people just let their kids, you know, into this stuff. And, you know, not to blame the parents of the kids who are victims to this, but don't make yourself a victim. Like, you should at least be aware of what's going on and be monitoring this stuff.
Right.
And because we don't want the government having to do it. Right. It's up to the parents to have to do it. Explain to people who don't know about this and haven't heard it, just quickly, like, sort of the modus operandi of these groups.
Well, so for one thing that you touched on is, like, you know, how do parents give their kids unfettered access to these, you know, to the internet? But the problem is that a lot of times parents don't realize that apps like Roblox, which they see, oh, it's just a kid's game,
right?
They don't realize that anyone can just walk up to your kid's character with a shirt that says 764, I love CP, or, oh, we were even seeing recently that these guys were putting, like GIFs and like videos on their characters playing gore and Nazi stuff, right? So they're approaching kids in online platforms. Roblox is a huge one because there's really not a lot of moderation. And, they're trying to get the kids to go to private platforms like Discord. From there, they're going to be indoctrinating them, desensitizing them, grooming them. So that might mean showing them child pornography or gore, animal torture, or just grooming them in a more traditional sense, like a you know, teenage girls, believe that it's their new boyfriend or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they're getting sexually explicit content from the kids. And then in this particular group, that's a pretty common modus operandi of all of these groups, right? But for 764, what we see then is that they'll take that nude photo or that sexual content and they'll extort the kid and threaten and blackmail them to do more and more horrible stuff on camera. And it becomes like a contest to see who can get the kid to do the most horrible thing. So we're seeing things like making them kill their pets on camera. all the way up to documented suicides. There have been multiple documented suicides. In fact, there was just a news article in ABC about this the other day, talking to the family of a 13-year-old boy who was coerced to commit live stream on a live stream suicide on one of these channels by one of these members. Mm-hmm. So it's really the worst thing you can imagine. They're getting kids to get razor blades and carve like 764 and the abusers' names into their bodies. So these kids are leaving horribly scarred permanently. It's really tragic, and it's something that's so awful. I think a lot of people have a hard time really even listening to this because it's just so hard to hear.
And so hard to imagine, like, your kid falling into this, but it can happen to really anybody. Any kid can be seduced into this stuff. And so, again, like, for parents, I think the most important part of what you do is letting parents know, like, monitor your kids and let your kids know, like, they can come to you for anything. Because what happens most of the time, I think, is that you've got these people going, oh, you've done all this stuff. If you go to your parents, they're going to hate you. If you go to your parents, you're going to be in huge trouble. So, you know, they actually use the threat of getting in trouble about this stuff as a way to actually get kids closer to the abusers. And so parents need to, like, let the kids know, like, hey, does not matter what you've done or what you've been shown. Like, you need to tell me. And I wonder, and this just popped into my, well, any comments on that before we move on?
You're exactly right. You know, a lot of parents tend to bury their head in the sand and say, well, my kid's I'm going to micromanage everything they do on the internet. But, you know, as a longtime gun advocate, gun safety advocate, and I've done a lot of firearms training, I do the same thing with guns where parents say, well, I don't have a gun in the house. Why does my kid need to have gun safety? And it's like, because you're not always watching your kid. Your kid goes to other places. They go to school. They go to other kids' houses. And it's the same thing with this. You need to talk to them at an age-appropriate level about online, about sextortion and blackmail, and you need to let them know that they can always trust you for help.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then I wonder, just because you're bringing up the suicide stuff, and there was another story today that I saw about a kid that had sort of become addicted to a chat bot and had basically, you know, lost all of their real friends and been addicted, and then he ended up killing himself in February of this year. And it was, you know, another warning sign for parents about these new technologies and the way that they can be used to really distort children's minds. I wonder if AI becoming more prevalent has affected 764, if it's made it easier or more difficult for them to do what they're doing. I don't know if you have any information on that, but that's just what came into my mind when you're talking about suicide. And I'm seeing the similarities between that and what's happening with, like, ChatGPT, you know, telling kids they should kill themselves. Like, it's creepy
stuff. It looks like, luckily, I mean, I'm sure it's not too far off, but, you know, it seems like, for now, they haven't figured that part out. What we've seen with some of these recent criminal complaints is we've seen documented evidence of extortion and grooming manuals that they're writing to share with others about how to find kids in vulnerable communities. They pick kids who are already having self-harm issues or eating disorders, or maybe they're trans, right? So they know how to pick these kids, and they're writing handbooks to share with others. And the handbooks themselves are not made by ChatGPT, even though you would think that they would think of that, but it's just broken English and just terrible. It's hard to read. But yeah, I mean, it seems like they could definitely escalate to that at some point.
Well, it seems like it could be a good way to actually police for this stuff, but I hadn't thought about how AI would intersect with this. How long do you think this will go on? Because it seems like they're arresting people on almost a continual basis for this. Is there going to be a time where eventually this group just doesn't exist anymore? Or, like, what do you think is the ultimate solution for this problem? Is it just arresting people as they pop up? Or is there something more the government can do to try to shut this whole thing down?
I wish I could give you less of a bleak outlook, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that these groups will continue to gain members. As long as, you know, they have these platforms where they're able to do so. You know, I do want to put a little bit of complicity on the platforms themselves, right? Because obviously we don't want the government to step in and have to monitor things and do things like that. But the platforms themselves have a lot of tools already at their disposal that they should and could be using to remove things like self-harm content. Like, I've talked about this on BBC News. Talked to me about what I found on X. I found communities full of children cutting themselves and posting the videos online. And these predators are in the comments telling the kids to go to DMs because they want to find that kid and groom them. And, you know, that's horrifying for me. I don't know why X would even allow that. Like, seems like AI should be able to immediately wash that, because that's a giant victim pool. So there's lots of things that could be done, aside from obviously arresting these people. But as far as like the FBI goes, or international law enforcement, it's going to be continuously trying to find these guys after they have victims and arrest them, which is just how our justice system works.
Yeah. And it's, you know, obviously we don't want to empower the government, you know, unnecessarily, but it seems like, you know, Roblox is a great example. They seem to, and tell me if I'm wrong here, and this is just my opinion, but it seems like Roblox in particular resists with everything they've got doing anything to make their platform safer for kids. And it's a kids platform, but like we've seen stories recently where people reach out to Roblox, go, hey, this is a problem, and they just get nothing. Why is it that they seem so resistant to some of this stuff?
Roblox is a nightmare. We knew early on in investigating 764 that Roblox was their primary platform of choice for finding kids that are victims and for, you know, for just like grooming kids and doing all this awful stuff. I eventually linked up with some of these Roblox creators. Like there's one named Schlepp, who got really big and got a lot of attention for going after Roblox for these things. And then Roblox banned him from the platform for doing, for being a vigilante. And, you know, I remember talking to him and I know he was very upset about losing his Roblox account, but I'm like, dude, this is going to propel things into the upper stratosphere of virality.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. So there was so much negative attention on Roblox that they're finally being pressured by us, not just parents, but by users of the platform to make changes. And they're starting to slowly try to start making those changes because of public pressure. So that's another thing we can do. We can keep the public pressure on the platform to proactively, you know, do this, because one thing that we've seen over and over and over again is that other countries like the UK, for example, they will use the platform's terrible moderation and the fact that there's so much child exploitation to step in with these online safety bills.
Right.
And we know that that's just a Trojan horse. We know that that's just veiled censorship apparatus, and it doesn't actually do anything to protect kids, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so... That's what I've actually written an entire Substack article about this, about how these platforms being complicit in this stuff actually opens the door for government regulation. And so really we should be, as parents and people who care about kids, we should be pressuring platforms to address the issue.
Yeah. And that can work. And they just need to, you know, understand that they're getting a lot of public attention and that they can easily, you know, assuage the, you know, fury by just making some simple moderation changes. But they seem to just be so resolutely against that, which it seems like, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's cost prohibitive. It doesn't seem like, that's what's so confusing about it, is like, why would you not do this? You've got all your entire platform depends on kids being able to play there. You know, parents are going to see reports about Roblox being open to pedophiles. They're not going to let their kids play. So it just, I don't know, it just seems ridiculous that they're so resistant. And it seems like a very easy solution to be pressuring them with everything we've got. You know, there's some other interesting intersection. I don't know how much you want to get into this, but I saw your tweet about Malcolm Nance. Now, this is kind of changing the topic quite a bit, but it's weird how there's overlap between some of the biggest news stories these days with 764 and the research that you've done, and this story about Malcolm Nance apparently having. Should I read your tweet, or do you want to? What do you want? Do you want to get into this?
Well, what's the crossover here? A little bit about like my journey, right, which has been a very long and twisted path that has definitely intersected with a lot of very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
But how I first learned about, before I learned about 764, I learned about this satanic cult called Order of Nine Angles, which ended up, a lot of those aesthetics ended up influencing 764, and there was a lot of membership crossovers, and that's why people correctly say that 764 is linked to O9A. It's not like a super rigid connection, but there's just like a loose influence there. And when I was looking into O9A, I found counterterrorism researcher named Jade Parker. She's a counterterrorism analyst who actually worked for Malcolm Nance and his tapestry group. And they were doing, you know, simulations. I know that Malcolm Nance has done a lot of war game simulations and stuff like that. Well, I started to try to look for more information about Jade Parker, and I found, like, her tweet archives. She deleted everything, but there was archives of her tweets. And it was really just, like, accusing everyone in that sphere of countering violent extremism, counterterrorism analysts, government, people who liaison with the FBI about this stuff, and the academics and those people, accusing them of wrongdoing and even accusing them of criminal activity. And then she also alluded to knowing who the pipe bomber was or having a good idea of that. And then after that, Jade just kind of vanished offline. Well, as an update, we now know that Jade has actually filed a lawsuit against basically the entire intelligence apparatus of the counterterrorism community.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like her lawsuit includes like George Washington University, Middlebury, Connecticut, and a bunch of key individuals within this countering violent extremism sphere. And so, a lot of those names that she was tweeting frantically about started popping up in this January 6th narrative. Talking about how Malcolm Nance somehow had this like prediction about January 6th before it happened and wrote a book about, you know, how he predicted January 6th. And there's some other very strange things that Malcolm Nance did specifically with regards to like the events on January 5th. Like for example, I had this very strange intersection with a side story of like a former CIA guy named Casey Gray, who actually went into the Capitol on January 5th and put a sticker on Nancy Pelosi's door. The sticker said Gold Corp. Well, Gold Corp is actually kind of a meme among ex-veterans, right? So these Special Forces ex-veterans guy. And it was really nothing. It wasn't actually like an organization or anything. But after that, Malcolm Nance started trying to accuse these veterans of having, you know, spearheaded something at January 6th, and it turned out that that was just a false narrative they were pushing. And so he's been caught kind of pushing false narratives quite a few times. And that was, I can say that's a false narrative because it was investigated in the January 6th committee and they dismissed it.
Oh, even they dismissed it. Well, I mean,
yeah.
They took everything they could get.
So it's really weird how there's that overlap between Jade, who is one of the people who did the most research early on Order of Nine Angles,
an official position, right? I mean, she was in the government investigating this stuff as her job.
Yes. I think she was probably at that point working for the private sector, but she was part of the intelligence apparatus.
Yeah.
And, you know, she seems to have a lot of theories about accelerationists, being behind January 6th insurrection, but because she's kept very quiet since her disappearance. So, we now know that she's still got a lawsuit going. So that's probably why.
Well, and of course, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because the latest information shows that it's very likely, they found the culprit, who was a former, Capitol Police officer who started working for the CIA around that time. And, obviously Steve Baker of The Blaze has uncovered that and revealed it. And I've seen a little bit of people going, well, that might not be true, but no real pushback. You know, they've sort of avoided responding to it outright, which makes me think it's legitimate. So I was wondering if that revelation sort of corresponds with what this Jade Parker character had said, because she said she'd made a series, you put it, a series of frantic tweets claiming she knew who the Capitol pipe bomber was, which I think sort of aligns. If it was somebody in the Capitol Police, she might be aware of that.
Or it might have been one of, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to put out any information because I honestly don't know. I think that there are some bad actors out there who've targeted me thinking I have information I'm not revealing or I'm waiting to reveal, but I don't have any smoking gun. I wasn't impressed with Steve Baker's story, honestly, just because I didn't see a smoking gun evidence except for the gate analysis, which is pretty, I'm hesitant to buy that narrative until I see more proof. I mean, would it surprise me that it was actually that woman? No, of course not. It would make total sense that it was a U.S. Capitol Police officer. But also I worry about like us missing something bigger while we're focusing on that. So I'm still keeping my options open. I'm hoping, I know that the FBI even alluded to having like breaking information coming out, but I feel like we live in this post-truth age too, where it's like, do we even believe it at this point?
Right.
You know? And so,
it's hard to say, but you know, if it came out and then, you know, Steve Baker said, we figured out who the pipe bomber was and it's some dude from Illinois that works at a chicken factory, you know, it's like, then it'd be like, okay, well that's random and Jade Parker probably didn't know who it was, but it's like the fact that Jade was suspicious of other people in the intelligence community.
She didn't think it was a woman.
She thought it was a woman.
She said she thought it was a black woman.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that would be off a little bit.
Information that I probably haven't told anyone before.
Interesting. Well, and I just remember the first time you came on. Again, I think you had just produced Where is Jade Parker?
You know where she is now. My part six, which is actually, it's pinned to my Twitter profile. I talk a little bit more about this specific thing and where Jade is now and why she disappeared. We don't have any reason to think she's hurt. In fact, we think that she's living her best life as a volunteer firefighter.
Oh. Yeah. Well, good for her.
I know. I can't even hate on her for that, even though I think that she could have done a lot of good by sticking around. I understand her desire to get out. I mean, she was in the shark tank.
Right.
She was being attacked very heavily because she disagreed with the narrative that people were pushing. And, the idea I get of Jade is that she was kind of an unusual, maybe neurodivergent type of person, but she was very truth seeking and she was very loyal to her country and to the truth. Mm. I don't think that she was loyal to the Democrats or Republicans. I think she kind of was just a free floating and looking for truth over everything else. And I think that's why they attacked her and wanted to get her gone. Wow. Because you can't have that, can you?
Right. No, not when you and all of your friends are engaged in, you know, very blatant criminality. You don't want the good people around to blow the whistle. And that's very disturbing. I mean, what is your take on the FBI right now? Do you think they're moving in the right direction? Do you think enough has been done? I know we don't have too much longer, with you here, but what's your take on Kash Patel's FBI? Are they doing the right thing or are they still infested?
For 764, I mean, I tried to tell Alex this earlier. I was like, Alex, you got to understand, I sit behind a computer and I research these accelerationist pedophile groups all day long. I don't know anything about Mom Dami or
right, right.
Anything, you know, he's like, it'll be okay. High five. But I can say from a 764 standpoint that they've definitely been making a big show of force. They've definitely made it a priority. And I want people to remember that 764 was around during the Biden administration. I mean, it started in 2021. There were a couple of arrests before Trump took office, but overwhelmingly the number of arrests have increased exponentially. The number of investigations open have increased exponentially, which tells me right there that that's like solid proof that they're taking it very seriously. And I've personally spoken to a lot of people in the FBI who've contacted me about I've been the victim in like multiple FBI complaints.
Right.
So unfortunately for me, that's probably right around the corner for me, is having to deal with that headache. Like possible testifying and stuff.
Oh, geez.
Guys, I hope not. But what I'm saying is, like, every time I've talked to one of these FBI agents, they are committed.
Yeah.
You know, cause they don't like, I mean, nobody likes these guys. We want them gone. Not even the Order of Nine Angles guys like these guys.
They even everybody want them
gone. Like the satanic cultists who birthed you don't like you and want you to go away. Right.
They're the enemies of humanity. Well, it's great to see the FBI. Cause again, as much crap we talk about, the FBI on a regular basis here, and I'm not going to stop, but you got to give them credit where it's due. And the fact that they're arresting these people and busting up these networks means children are not being victimized. And you have to celebrate
that.
It's
a citizen's responsibility to criticize our government and even make fun of them and ridicule them when necessary.
100% of the time. And we just hope we don't get sued for doing so. Becca, thanks so much for being here with us on X at BX_on_X or BXrights.substack.com. Follow her today.
Everything we do is the tip of the spear. You are the tip of the spear when you spread the word, when you pray for us, when you buy products. So listen, we have shortfalls, and they're not even that big, but I understand the economy's totally shot. Our audience is as big as it's ever been, and back when the economy was going and we had an audience this big, we'd be in high cotton and I'd be able to expand. Right now, I'm just trying to stay on air. So I need you to make the decision to go to theallyshowstore.com right now and take advantage of the biggest sale ever. Black Friday came early. That's right. Black Friday has come early. We always launch it the weekend after before Black Friday. Be a little different. Black Friday comes early. Mega sale, the biggest sale ever. Buy one, get one free on all supplements. The Irish Sea Moss, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Bovine Colostrum, and dozens of other amazing products. This is the biggest sale we've ever done. Ends Friday, November 28th. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement for free. Normally, it's buy one bottle of Irish Sea Moss, get another bottle of Irish Sea Moss, or buy one bottle of Methylene Blue, get another bottle. No, this is add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement free. You can mix and match any of our amazing supplements together. Don't miss out. This offer ends Friday, November 28th. Visit theallyshowstore.com today and fuel your body, mind, and power the info war. Take advantage of this amazing deal while supplies last. And here's another little tidbit that makes this a total loss leader when you use it. If you go to alexjonesapp.com and download the Droid or Apple app for free, that are the top apps, just in the last few months we launched it, folks at Bigly, the Alex Jones channel, the Alex Jones network, it's the same shopping cart on the app for your desktop or phone. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top. So everybody should get the app and should definitely use that. But if you want to support us more, get more funds in, then don't use the app and get the additional 20% off. I'm serious. It's like a form of a donation. When I tell you that I need your support, it's absolutely critical. This is the most critical time.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on. I'll be joined in the third hour by Tiffany Cianci. We're talking about the disturbing marriage between private equity and AI. I'm very excited to talk about that. We have a lot of news to get into, but I want to illustrate something here. This is, again, my frustration of seeing Mamdani and Trump sort of glad-handing with each other. Trump's like, this Mamdani guy's got a lot of great ideas. And it's like, well, no, he doesn't. Actually, he doesn't have it. He has wishes. He has dreams. He has fantasies that sound nice. But when asked how he's going to do any of it, he has absolutely no clue. So that's not good. And we know that, in general, politicians, not the most honest group of people. But man, the Democrats are really setting new standards for lying. There's a woman who's running for a seat in Nashville, Tennessee. I guess she already is a representative of some sort. She's running for re-election. And she got in trouble because people think she hates Nashville. Now, she's come out to defend herself and set the record straight. She doesn't hate Nashville. What a ridiculous thing to say. Let's go to clip number 7 here. She posted this with the all caps label. No, I do not hate the city I represent. Okay, what a crazy idea. Let's watch.
State Representative Afton Bain here, the Democratic nominee for the 7th Congressional Special Election in Tennessee. For those of you just joining in, I often record segments in my Jeep Wrangler called Wranglin' Time. Yes, there is a theme song, and no, I will not be singing it today. But yes, I will bring it back because I know a lot of you miss it, and you've said I sing well.
She's so quirky.
So I look a little rough. I have bags under my eyes because the Republican eye of Sauron has finally shifted towards moi. And I'm sure you've seen the commercials. I'm sure you've seen the onslaught of ads. And then today, the Republicans decided that they're going to start this narrative that me, the state representative who represents downtown Nashville, doesn't like the city. Now, I always want Nashville to be better, right? I want Nashville to be a place where working people can thrive, right? But sure, I get mad at the Bachelorette sometimes. I get mad at the pedal taverns, right? And you're talking to someone who has cried no less than 10 times in the Country Music Hall of Fame. The girl that just goes to the Ryman to hang out. No, we're not even going to go there. We are so close to winning this race, which is why these rumors are getting more wild. So I can't wait to see what they come up with next. But y'all, please keep doing the work.
What they come up with next. Okay, all right. We could take it down. She's so quirky. She's so relatable. It's like, she's like, I'm sure my Jeep Wrangler. It's like, whatever. And the Republicans, these crazy Republicans with their eye of Sauron have decided to come out with this narrative that I hate the city. It's like, what? What are they going to come up with next? Anyway, here's a video of her saying that she hates the city. Clip number 6. Let's watch.
Things have been heavily involved with the Nashville mayoral race because I hate the city. I hate the Bachelorettes. I hate the pedal taverns. I hate country music. I hate all of the things that make Nashville apparently an it city to the rest of the country, but I hate it. Yeah. I'm that girl at the airport that all these Bachelorettes are giddy walking out in their two-toned colored Pantone pink shirts. And they walk out and they're like, oh my God, Nashville is so bad.
That's so loud.
I know we say it all the time. It's worth reminding you. Democrats are all terrible people. I wish it wasn't the case. I wish I could look at the divide and say, this is fake. This is imposed. No, there's one side that just genuinely, they really hate you. They hate the city they represent. They hate the things they say they love. I mean, it's just endless hate from these people. And then when called on it, they're like, the Republicans have come up with this crazy narrative. I hate Nashville. And then she's on video, or she's recorded saying, quote, I hate this city. I hate everything about the city that makes it this city. I hate the Bachelorette Party. But I cry at the Country Music Museum. It's like, no, but when you don't know you're being recorded, you say you hate all of it. Specifically, you hate country music, you said, according to you. They're just like, these people are liars. I don't know what else to tell you. They lie, they lie, they lie.
Well, barring a miracle, InfoWars, the website, the studio, will be shut down somewhere in or around January 1st, 2026. But regardless, the InfoWar lives on. But InfoWarsStore.com, the legendary site that literally funded the InfoWar because of your great support with so many great products, has gotten two final shipments in of Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula and Ultimate Fish Oil. Both are the highest quality, the best out there. They're fan favorites. And right now, they're 40% off until they sell out. So this is probably, I said about 90% chance, your last chance to get Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula and Ultimate Fish Oil at InfoWarsStore.com. But don't worry, the InfoWar will continue with the Alex Jones Network. It will continue with all the other work we're doing. But right now, if you want to get these legendary products the last time you can, get them exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Again, they're both 40% off for a limited time, so take action now, InfoWarsStore.com.
Watch it live right now on X.com.
Look, all I'm saying is that names have meaning, and they impact lives. It's actually pretty stunning how names can determine people's personality and stuff. And when you name your kid Afton Bane, they're going to become a supervillain. I don't know what else to tell you. Afton Bane. Vote for me. I'm Afton Bane. It's like, okay, have you ever been punched by Batman? It sounds like you're a villain from a cartoon, and then you are one, apparently. Apparently you are one. I want to represent Nashville. I love the country music. I'm just a down-home girl. And then it's just on secret recording, just like, I hate this city. I hate the people. I hate their stupid culture. It's like, of course that's who they want in charge of Nashville. Obviously, if you are looking to exploit and destroy a culture, that's the exact type of person who can lie just as easy as she can breathe, shameless, just absolutely shameless, sitting there in her car, flagrantly lying about things that we have on tape. It's like you really got to understand the level of evil we're talking about here. Like, we're not joking. We're not, you know, it's like the It's Always Sunny scene where they're talking about the election. It's Frank being like, Hillary Clinton hates freedom. I was like, what do you mean she hates freedom? It's like, I don't know, dude. They hate freedom. I don't know what else to tell you. They genuinely hate the people that they want to be in charge of. That's the thing I don't understand. That's the thing that's so baffling and sort of inhuman to me. Is like, okay, if you hate Nashville, don't live there. You go somewhere else that you like. You hate the people of Nashville. Like, stop pretending you like them. It's just, it's so, it would never even enter into my mind to like hate a city and be like, but I should be in charge of this. I should be in charge of it. Yeah, let's go to the clip here. It's Always Sunny. One of the, you know, dark horses. People don't realize the brilliance of the It's Always Sunny political satire. I think it's better than South Park at this point. Let's go to me telling the truth.
One.
Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton?
Awful.
How is she awful?
Hates freedom.
There are plenty of amazing...
It's true. What are you going to say? It's true. It's absolutely true. Again, you think we're joking. You think it's like, oh, we're exaggerating. But then you catch them on tape, and they're just like, I hate this city. I hate the people in it. I hate the things that make it good. Vote for me. Vote for me to tear it all down. is it any wonder these places go to crap with these people in charge? They literally hate the places that they want to run. Okay. Hope we're all realizing this, accepting it, internalizing it, and defeating them with everything we've got. Now, we have a ton of very interesting videos with a lot of very pertinent news to get to. I think we'll start with, I don't even know what to start with. We'll start with Ukraine because there is a new peace deal on the table that seems like sort of the last offering from Trump. It seems like he's done with it. He's sick of having to deal with Ukraine. He's sick of having to deal with Russia. He's sick of, you know, putting together these big peace summits and then it just all falls apart because Zelensky is a scumbag. You know, I should have brought in some other stuff. There's sort of a constant buzz in the background. It never rises up the level that we like want to pay attention to it, but like in the last week, there have been multiple stories of corruption in Ukraine. And it seems like maybe they're just not trying to cover it up anymore. Remember, before Ukraine was invaded, it was considered the most corrupt country in Europe. And there's article after article about just how thoroughly corrupt the entire government structure of Ukraine was. Then those articles disappeared. And for 2 years, three years almost at this point, we've been pretending like they're good and they're a democracy and that we have to, you know, defend them or else all of Europe is lost. It's been ridiculous because we've been at the same time sending them hundreds of billions of dollars that tends to go absolutely missing. Like there have been reports that half the money sent to Ukraine just goes into their pockets. And they just started a new, created a new ski resort worth like $500 million. And one of Zelensky's like underlings was caught stealing $100 million and I think fled to Israel when he was caught with this. So it's all kind of coming apart at the seams, Ukraine. It's sort of falling apart. I don't think they can last too much longer at this rate. And they can't last at all without our support, our intelligence, our weaponry, our money, and our, you know, diplomatic backing. So this is the latest. U.S. demands Ukraine sign peace deal by Thanksgiving or else. Ukraine is under pressure from the Trump administration to sign a peace deal by Thanksgiving Thursday or face a loss of intelligence sharing as well as weapons. Army Secretary Dan Driscoll presented the plan to Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky, which states that Ukraine should Ukraine not comply, they will see an end to intelligence sharing and weapons deliveries. They'll have to give up some land under the plan, which Zelensky has previously said is a non-starter. And that includes the entire eastern Donbass region, the area that Russia has taken during its during the conflict will remain theirs in both Kherson and Zaporizhia, per the New York Post. The war-torn nation would never be permitted to join NATO under the plan and would pledge to not seek membership in that treaty organization. The Biden administration had dangled the possibility of NATO membership before Zelensky and Russian President Vladimir Putin balked at the idea of having another NATO member on his doorstep. So, like, do y'all understand how crazy that is? This whole war was started and perpetuated because the U.S. refused to disallow Ukraine from being a NATO member. Ukraine becoming a NATO member was the thing that Putin wanted to stop, and it was the thing that we kept pushing. And every time there's been a peace deal, it's been a sticking point. And now they're being forced to or are just going to have to end up agreeing that Ukraine will never be a part of NATO, meaning this entire war and the 1.7 million dead Ukrainians died for nothing. They died for nothing. They died for less than nothing, really. Considering the democracy they were fighting for doesn't exist in the first place. All of this could have been avoided. All of this has come to nothing because at the end of it all, they're having to give up on the thing that started the war in the first place. It really is pathetic. And Europe is raging at this, impotently, I might add. They're impotently raging at all of this. In fact, I saw, I believe, the president of Poland, previous president, Donald Tusk, you know, coming out and saying, Poland will make our own decisions. Thank you very much. We will not be forced into an agreement one way or the other. It's like, no, you will. No, you're going to go along with what we say because we're America and you're not. And you only exist at our behest. You exist at our, with our permission. Okay. So you're going to do what we want. And that's the way America should be operating around the world anyway. If we're going to have an empire, we should at least benefit from it and use it to our own ends. Let's go to a couple clips from Zelensky here. First, go to clip number 5. This is dictator Zelensky addressing the Ukrainian people about this peace deal. And he's basically admitting defeat. Let's watch. Ukrainians, he says. In the life of every nation, there is a moment when everyone needs to talk honestly, calmly, without assumptions, without all the fuss, as it is. As I always try to talk to you, now is one of the most difficult moments in our history. Now the pressure on Ukraine is one of the most difficult. Now Ukraine can find itself before a very difficult choice. Or the loss of dignity, or the risk of losing a key partner, or the difficult 28 points, or the extremely difficult winter, the hardest and furthest risks. Life without freedom, without dignity, without justice, so that we believe in the one who has already attacked twice. He's like, yeah, sorry, I got 1.7 of your guys killed. I'm going to go retire to my beachfront property in Florida now. You know, I like that Trump is ending these wars. I do want the wars to end, obviously. And it feels like it's more of just like a symptom of the globalist control that still exists, that these wars are not ending in the way that they should and would historically. Like, it seems like we're going to come to an agreement. Russia's going to take the land that it's conquered. Ukraine's going to have to go along with it. Promise not to invade NATO. And it's just going to be sort of dropped, which is like, fine. It's better to not have the war than have the war. But I'm thinking also of, you know, what happened with Israel and Gaza. And like, people weren't happy with that. And people aren't going to be happy with what's happening in Ukraine. Because typically in history, what we learned was that the end of a war, one side would be utterly defeated and would be forced to submit to sometimes outrageous demands, but always some sort of final trial, final agreement that places the blame fully on one of the combatants and punishes them for the war. Now, it obviously has some bad outcomes. After World War One, the Treaty of Versailles and the guilt clause, war guilt clause that was placed into the agreement by John Foster Dulles, head of the CIA at the time, totally laid the groundwork for World War II because it instituted crushing debt on Germany totally unfairly when Germany never lost an acre of land during that war. So I'm not saying, you know, we want to like repeat that by any means, but it seems like if Zelensky just got 1.7 million of his people killed for nothing, maybe that's a crime. Maybe that should be treated as a crime of some sort. Maybe we need a trial so his own people can judge what he just led them through. Or in the case of Israel and Gaza, you would think that Israel would be treated like the Nazis at the end of that conflict, considering the fact that you had the Nuremberg trials where all of the evidence of the dehumanization and the genocide and the killing of innocent people across Eastern Europe was presented, and the people were charged and convicted as war criminals and then hung until they're dead. Now we are seeing the genocide being live streamed every day from Gaza, and the people committing it, I guess, are now going to build waterfront property there. So it feels like there's a inadequacy to the conclusion of some of these conflicts that I think it just tells you that the wars are fake. The wars are fake. And they're meant to go on forever. And Trump ending them was not in the plans. So they're being forced to allow the wars to end, but they're not ending in a way that they would if they were a real conflict that, you know, we didn't have the ability to stop at any point if we chose to. Does that make sense? I don't know. Makes sense to me. So that was Zelensky basically admitting defeat and saying, you know, we're not going to have any dignity. I'm sorry, son, you have no dignity. Never had dignity. I don't know what else to tell you. You're fighting a war for dignity now? Okay, well, you're not a democracy, so you were fighting a war for democracy. That doesn't exist. Now you're fighting a war for dignity, even though you are a pathetic rat whose only accomplishment has been begging on your knees for other countries to give you weaponry to fight a war for which there is no point and never was a point. And this conclusion was always the inevitable outcome. It was either this or World War III, nuclear weapons, all of Europe in flames. These are the two options we have, and we've always had. Since the day Putin invaded Ukraine in February of 2022, the inevitable outcomes are a crushing defeat of Ukraine or World War III. That's it. There was never going to be any other opportunity. Now, or there's never going to be any other outcome to this. Ideally, I think what they told people the outcome would be, the whole point of the Ukraine war from the American perspective was to kill Ukrainians in order to weaken Russia, is to let Russia spend all of their resources and send all of their men into Ukraine to the killing fields. We could try to weaken Russia militarily and diplomatically without wasting any of our own lives. And we did that by installing Zelensky and then having him feed his own population into the meat grinder. Again, just totally horrific and awful and horrible. And that's why I think it's kind of, I'm kind of torn about this. Yes, I want peace. At the same time, it's like the crime that we've seen committed in front of our eyes, the manipulation, the corruption from Joe Biden and the withholding $1 billion to force this situation to the overthrow of the Ukrainian government, and the color revolution sponsored by George Soros and carried out by Victoria Nuland to, it's just the criminality is overwhelming. And when it ends with a whimper, it's kind of like, but where are the executions? But where are the where's the punishment for these mass murderers who have led 1.7 million Ukrainians to the abyss for nothing? I like peace. I want satisfaction. I want justice even more. Let's go to clip number four here. This is all the way back in time. This is a month after the war began. Here's President Zelensky in March of 2022 explaining what the purpose of the Ukraine war was. Keep this in mind as you watch this. Remember, the peace agreement he's going to sign removes the land that he was fighting for and totally disallows his inclusion into Ukraine, or inclusion into NATO for Ukraine. Here's what he was saying in March of 2022. He says, everyone has varied interests. There are those in the West who don't mind a long war. Because it would mean exhausting Russia, even if this means the demise of Ukraine. And comes at the cost of Ukrainian lives. This is definitely in the interest of some countries. Not in the interest of his country. But he went along with it. So he knew March of 2022, the war began in February of 2022, right? I have that right, right? And so he knew at that point, this is a proxy war by the West to waste Ukrainian lives to weaken Russia. And he went along with it. Here we are 3.5 years later, and he's achieved nothing. The original goals set out have been abandoned. 1.7 million people are dead. And we're basically where we were if this war had never started. This war had never started. Ukraine would be where it is now. Russia would be where it is now. If we'd agreed at the time, hey, you're right. We promised NATO would never move more towards Russia. We've moved more towards Russia continually over decades. This is a red line for Putin. Let's just agree. Ukraine will never be in NATO. We could have avoided 1.7 million dead Ukrainians. God only knows how many dead Russians. And just the horror that we've seen in the last 2.5 years. 3.5 years. It could have all been avoided. And that was on purpose. And they say, he said it right there. I don't need to speculate. I don't need to say, I think the Americans, you know, knew this was the case the whole time and did it. Zelensky himself knew in 2022, and he went along with it the entire time. Absolute scumbag traitor. And we've paid hundreds of billions of dollars to do nothing but senselessly kill an entire generation of Ukrainians. I guess that's not entirely true. Let me correct myself. Certain people are benefiting. After all, Goldman Sachs and BlackRock have the contracts to rebuild Ukraine, and the immigration NGOs are already gearing up and ready to replace the soldiers fed into the Ukrainian meat grinder with a bunch of African imports. So they'll do well. So they've, you know, eradicated a generation of men in Ukraine, and now those men will be replaced with Africans, and BlackRock and Goldman Sachs will profit hugely from the war that they've helped create, perpetuate, and now end. So, well done. Well done, you absolute murderous psychopaths. And there's another thing going on right now when it comes to Ukraine. But again, if you're a InfoWars viewer, you know I've been covering this from the beginning. And that is the aspect of the Ukrainian war that has to do with the overall overarching globalist scheme of a one world government with a one world religion, and understanding that the Russian Orthodox Church is seen as a major barrier to their satanic plans. The Russian Orthodox Church, unlike many other church organizations, including the Vatican or, you know, any of the sort of Zionist evangelical Christians here in America, the Russian Orthodox Church tells people that it's all a scam. They tell people globalism is a scam. They tell people the mark of the beast is coming. They actually oppose the system. And I've explained this a million times, but when it comes to, you know, the New World Order and the way it uses religion, you can't just say one religion is in favor of the New World Order and another's not. There's factions of all of them. And you'll see that certain factions are favored by the New World Order. Certain factions are despised by the New World Order. The Russian Orthodox Church, despised by the New World Order. Christian evangelicals, they love the New World Order. Or the New World Order loves them. New World Order loves Catholics. They love the Wahhabist Muslims. They hate the, Iranian-style, more moderate Muslims. They hate the Orthodox Christians. And they're really making it overt here. Joe Wilson, a representative of America, says this: the Russian Orthodox Church is not a separate religious organization, but an extension of the Russian state. Evangelizing is illegal in Russia, and Christians are targeted and killed in Ukraine. Members should not entertain this intelligence operation. So this guy is saying that a religion that millions of people adhere to in America is actually an intelligence operation from a foreign state, and the Christians are being killed in Ukraine. Ukraine itself is crushing the Christians in their own country. And the creation of the Ukrainian church as an offshoot or a breakaway from the Russian Orthodox Church was done outside of the process by which they're supposed to go through. They're supposed to get permission from the Metropolitan of Moscow, the head of the Orthodox Russian Church that the Ukrainian church was once a part of. They didn't. They got a dispensation from the Metropolitan or the Bishop of, like, Istanbul, I think. It's just very weird. But the point is, they launched the war in Ukraine in part as a way to sever a huge portion of the Russian Orthodox Christians away from their church and create a new church that would be more globalist and called the Ukrainian church. This is all, you know, part and parcel of the same operation. We'll return to this on the other side, because at the same time as this, you have a piece from the New York Times saying Orthodox Church pews are overflowing with converts. And you have the American representatives claiming that Russia and the Russian Orthodox Church is a foreign intelligence operation. Like, that is totally unacceptable. Like, that, it's crazy that a representative of America has decided that entire religion should be banned, I guess. So we'll get back to this on the other side, because I want to compare and contrast what they say about Russian Orthodoxy, maybe some other religions in America.
My fellow InfoWarriors, we are having right now, in late November into early December, the biggest sale in the history of InfoWars. That's in 28 years. You know why?
It's the InfoWars closing mega blowout sale. And some would say, well, the bad guys are about to take it over. Why should we support it? There's not even enough money in here to keep us running until they have the state auction, or they're saying mid-December to early January. And here's the catch. If they have a real auction and allow good guys to come in and bid, well, then we'll just continue on. I just won't be the owner. But you already saw the federal auction that even the judge said was a fraud and wasn't real to The Onion and Bloomberg and the Democrats. And so because they're the plaintiffs and they control what's happening through the state court judge that ran the original show trial on us, I'm not holding my breath. I mean, barring a miracle, they're going to, you know, auction it to themselves for $1 or whatever, and then this place shuts down. We've got the Alex Jones Network, our great sponsor, Bigly. But I'll tell you this. We'll shut down for sure if funds don't come in to InfoWarsStore.com. Remember last year when The Onion, this time last November, announced they owned us, sales went down over 75% and have stayed like that because people were like, well, we're not going to give them money. But, of course, the judge ruled they didn't buy it. And, of course, The Onion says now they intend to try to bid and get it again.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
But regardless, it doesn't matter. Our tank is on zero, basically. Okay, we're on E. This is just enough money coming in with the products we have to pay the payroll, to keep the lights on, and to operate to see if this final Hail Mary shot with the state auction works and if good guys are actually allowed to buy it. So remember, the plaintiffs have said they don't want money. They want us off the air. So I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go right to the line here. And this is the biggest sale. You ever heard us say 75% off? That's right. And the products we have are products with great manufacturers, supplement makers that love us and have been giving it to us on spec. So this is all fresh, ladies and gentlemen. We've been in bankruptcy. We've not been able to buy new product. But with this system, we have the product on hand, ready to ship to you, and you're guaranteed to get it. So take action right now. Emergency fundraiser, last chance to save up to 75% at InfoWarsStore.com. Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula, the very strongest, 40% off. Ultimate Fish Oil, the highest quality, incredible, 40% off. Prebiotic Fiber, 75% off. Pain MD, an incredible natural pain reliever, works incredibly. This is a product that I came up with top designers. Final run of that available. Pain MD, 60% off. Nitric Boost, a fan favorite. Dr. Judy Mikovits loves it. Cleans out the heart. So good for the cardiovascular. Spike protein detoxer, and men have a great effect, let's just say, in the man department with it. Nitric Boost, 40% off. Plus, great deals on books, DVDs, shirts, hoodies, and other items at InfoWarsStore.com. So this is probably the last run. These are collectible items. It's history. Help us fight right up to the end, never giving up, and trusting in God for a miracle if that's God's will. But God works through you, so take action, which is probably the last time you can, here in the next month at InfoWarsStore.com.
Is there's going to be a large set of plaintiffs who are going to be dividing up the corpse of InfoWars in the bankruptcy estate.
And money is just one component of that, and not the most important component of it.
Take Alex Jones' platform that he talks about away.
And if you're considering giving him money, I just want you to know that based on the jury's verdict today, it's not a very good bet.
The money's not even really the question for me. The question is, will this suit be successful at stopping him from being on the national stage?
Take him out.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Again, I'm seeing signals that I don't like about the Russian Orthodox Church or the Orthodox Church in general. Again, Joe Wilson, representative in America, says the Russian Orthodox Church is not a separate religious organization, but an extension of the Russian state. Again, we've been reporting on this for a while. A lot of people probably talked a lot about the Ukraine war. How many of them have told you about the split between the Ukrainian and Russian church and how central that is to the plot of the globalists that launched this whole war in the first place? It's about taking out Russia as a barrier to the New World Order, and their church is a major, major part of that. But of course, what he's saying doesn't even really apply to Russia, it's outrageous that he would say this anyway, considering the fact that he probably has thousands of constituents that are Russian Orthodox and probably never even been to Russia or anything. I mean, it's really in a lot of ways a ridiculous claim to make. And it would be obvious how ridiculous it is if it was applied to a religion and a country that it actually applies to. I think you know where I'm... Do you know where I'm going with this? It's not going to be a surprise, is it? How acceptable would it be to say Judaism is not a separate religious organization, but an extension of the Israeli state? That might make people mad, huh? And after all, evangelizing is, in fact, illegal in not Russia, but Israel. They actually just made it illegal. And I don't know what he's saying evangelizing is illegal in Russia. I think he means like trying to evangelize something other than religious orthodoxy. I've never heard of that. I don't know how you have a Christian country with a like explicitly Christian government with the church being like involved in government operations. Because he is right about that. It doesn't mean the Orthodox Church is the government. It means the Orthodox Church plays a role in the government, just like the Church of England plays a role in the English government. I mean, the King of England is the head, is the Pope of the Anglican Church. Okay, this is actually kind of normal for most countries. However, I do know that there is actually a law in Israel against trying to convert anybody or evangelizing Christianity at all. And Christians are targeted and killed, he says, in Ukraine, which is, again, interesting because the Ukrainian government has suppressed and oppressed the Russian Orthodox Church pretty relentlessly. Tucker Carlson's done entire, episodes about this. That's Ukraine oppressing Christians, not Russians. But he's blaming Russia for this, when, again, it would be just as applicable to say Christians are being targeted and killed in the West Bank or Gaza, which is where that's happening. Members should not entertain this intelligence operation. That's actually more applicable, I think, to Judaism in Israel than Russia and the Russian Orthodox Church, but you would never hear that because of what an outrageous thing it is to say that an entire religion is, in fact, an intelligence operation of a state and should therefore be suppressed in America. Totally crazy, but that's what's being said. Again, this happens at the same time. The New York Times admits that Orthodox church pews are overflowing with converts, saying something is changing in an otherwise quiet corner of Christianity in the United States, one that prides itself on how little it has changed over time. Priests are swapping stories about record attendance numbers. Older members are adjusting, or not, to the influx of new attendees. Parishes are strategizing about how to accommodate more prospective converts than existing clergy can reasonably handle on their own. So the Orthodox Church, Eastern Orthodox tradition, is exploding in America. Why? The answer is obvious, because they stick to tradition. And that's what people want. And nobody wants, like, these churches are in a doom spiral where their members numbers going down. So they're like, oh, we got to do something. They're like, I know, let's abandon our principles. I know, let's abandon the things that we believe and instead become gay. Maybe that will help. And so then people who are actually want church, they actually want a spiritual gathering that's meaningful, and they're getting from the pulpit the same thing they hear at CNN, and they're like, this is stupid, I'm leaving. And so then the numbers go down even more, and the church goes, oh, geez, we need to open up even more. It's very stupid. Whereas the Orthodox Church basically is just doing what it's been doing for 2,000 years, celebrating the actual things Christians believe, celebrating masculinity and femininity in a biblical way, and people are drawn to that. They're drawn to the strength and the consistency and the moral certainty that they represent, not the wishy-washy, frankly, gay activities of the American churches. Again, the powers that be don't want this. They don't like this. They're happy if you're going to some mega church that tells you that, Israel is the, modern state of Israel is the same as the ones back then, and that, Jesus needs us to start World War III so he can come back. Like, all this absurd stuff that is just funneling Christians into what will become the you know, Abrahamic one world religion, they would love if you join those churches. They don't want you joining the churches with the men in beards. That's the one they don't want you joining. Now, a friend of the show, Max Anthony Pacheco at Real Max Pacheco on X, noted this, said Orthodox Christians should know what kind of political attacks are coming our way in the next few years. In the New York Times article published yesterday about the flood of converts coming into the church, especially young men, there were a lot of not-so-subtle accusations of anti-Semitism, white supremacy, racism, and far-right extremism being prevalent in the church. Indeed, these terms are meaningless, but they're still an attack on the church. Not to mention the weak slander from Representative Joe Wilson just days ago that ROKOR, the Russian Orthodox Church, and the Serbian Church are assets of foreign intelligence. It goes without saying that such slander serves only as vindication of the Orthodox faith. Leftist institutions are quite desperate to undermine the church's effectiveness at curing our spiritually sick culture. Will they succeed in their endeavor? Not according to the church's, to Christ's promise that the gate of Hades will not prevail against the church. So again, he points out some of the, you know, statements, from the New York Times that again is talking about how dangerous it is that people are becoming Orthodox because of how, you know, traditional they are. Says this, Representative Josiah Trinum is one of the most well-known American priests, appeared on Tucker Carlson's show shortly after the assassination of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk to discuss Christian mourning traditions. In a more recent video, reflection on the prominent white nationalist Nick Fuentes' appearance on Mr. Carlson's show, Father Trinum claimed he didn't know much about Mr. Fuentes and went on to praise the man's conversion, a conversation about the scourge of pornography. Father Trinum's congregation in Riverside, California has more than 1,000 active parishioners and 240 in the process of converting. 5 years ago, I had 75, which I thought was a lot, he said in an interview this fall. The trajectory is increasing. So again, these subtle implications, the insinuations going on here. You know, this guy who calls himself a priest, he didn't denounce Nick Fuentes, claim not to know much about him. But yeah, he probably doesn't. He probably doesn't care. And after all, Nick Fuentes is a Catholic, so like, why even bring him up in this conversation, except that you're trying to smear this priest because he appeared on Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes also appeared on Tucker Carlson, creating the link in the minds of readers that this priest is, you must be one of those Nick Fuentes type characters, the Tucker Carlson types. He goes on to say, certain corners of the Orthodox internet are not only just conservative and traditionalist, but openly racist and anti-Semitic. Oh my God. Let me tell you something you probably already know. Christianity is anti-Semitic by definition. Okay? Why? Because it's not Judaism. It is, in fact, a different religion. Different religions believe different things. If I am a Christian and believe that Jesus Christ is God and died and rose from the dead, cured all of our, you know, cured all of our sins, forgave us our sins, et cetera, et cetera, then I don't believe Judaism. It's just, sorry, that's how it is, okay? You can be one or the other, but these are different religions with different beliefs. Sorry about that, okay? And there's a trend that Orthodox writers have identified from a long time ago. And again, if you want to learn about the modern world, read books by Orthodox priests, okay? Now, I mean, they really are like really slandering the Orthodox Church these days. In the South, there's a certain strain of neo-Confederate orthodoxy that marries white supremacy and Orthodox practice. Matthew Heimbach, who organized the notorious Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017, had been excommunicated from the Antiochian Orthodox Church but joined another branch. If he'd been excommunicated, that would hint to me that it's not exactly in favor of what he was doing. So that would be against your thing. But like, why is this seen as anything different than what it is? This is just anti-Christian slander. That's all this is. That's all this is. I hate to use the same thing over and over, but just imagine. You can just imagine if it was the other way around. All this is doing is taking something that is in the public's mind as a bad, racist, hateful thing and saying, well, you know somebody who was in that? You know he was Orthodox Church. He was Orthodox, right? So maybe it's this religion that's really the problem. Like, okay, is that how we're doing this? Okay, so if we point to an evil thing and point out that a Jewish person is in charge of it, I guess kind of all of Judaism is convicted in this, huh? If I'm going to take the mindset of these people, like, we shouldn't accept this. This is a extremely hateful and irresponsible thing for the New York Times to print, and it's an obvious, blatant, and direct attack on Orthodox Christians. It's not that complicated. Be obvious if it was any other group. Orthodox Christian writer Rod Dreher recently warned that, quote, anti-Semitism is spreading like a virus among religious conservatives of the Zoomer generation, including among the Orthodox. In interviews, parish priests say they see part of their job to acculturate ortho bros with extreme views to parish life, which they insist was far removed from violent rhetoric online. Yeah, obviously. Like, what are you talking about? The Orthodox Church has nothing to do with violent rhetoric online or so-called anti-Semitism. And if you want to know about this stuff, read things from Father Seraphim Rose, Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future, or Father Spiridon, who writes about how, you know, aliens are being used as a New World Order psyop to destroy Christianity or to undermine it. And other things they talk about are things like multicultural faith summits, where all different faiths come together and they try to see, you know, how they can, you know, live together better, whatever it is. And he points out and he lists all these different, you know, summits that were carried out. And in every single one of them, it was Christianity that was made to change. You never see, you know, these interfaith summits happen and it comes out saying, you know, we've decided that the Jews need to be less anti-Christian. And we're agreeing to remove some language in our holy books that, you know, Christians don't like. Never happens. But you do see these summits occur, and the churches say, yeah, we changed some of the language so it wouldn't foster anti-Semitism. It's like, how is it that constantly, this isn't about two faiths both changing to meet in the middle. It's always the Christians are expected to change and comport themselves for the benefit of other religions. And it's been happening since, like, the 60s. And the Father Seraphim Rose book goes through the history of it. Critics say the top church leaders rarely condemn even the most noxious rhetoric from high-profile Orthodox Christians. Quote, from an institutional perspective, I get it. You're excited about growth, said Sarah Riccardi Schwartz, an assistant professor of religion and anthropology at Northwestern University, who was written about Americans who convert to Russian Orthodoxy. But when that growth comes with violent political tendencies, that's not good. It has to be checked. So it's just an attack on the church. I don't know what else to tell you. It's just literally just an attack on the faith of Orthodox Christianity by mostly Jewish people. So, like, why would that be okay? And again, if you want to associate people converting to Orthodoxy and anti-Semitism or extremism or whatever else, like, it's just, it's first of all, dishonest. Second of all, it's just a blood libel against, you know, Christian, whatever. But it's also like, are we going to do, is this what we're doing now? Is this what we're doing now? So apparently, you know, ortho bros have this troublesome track record of being racist online. That's what we just heard. I hate to say it. There's another religion that has a track record, not of making statements online, but of murdering tens of thousands of innocent people and then celebrating it. Okay, what are we concerned about here? What are we worried about? I don't like seeing this conflict, but it's here. Okay? We need to get over it. It's the church's fault for this, the American churches. It's their fault for going gay, for listening to the people like that Schwartz woman. And it's really concerning that, you know, your church is growing so fast. You know, we might want to check that a little bit. I want to watch out for that. Okay, so you're the enemy. I mean, that's all you need to understand. That was an article written by the enemy, promoting the enemy's ideas and the enemy's attack against the church. Just laying that out. You should be aware of the danger that the Orthodox Church poses to the New World Order and the subtle ways that they are signaling that it will soon be a major vector of attack. Because their attempt to divide the church through the Ukraine war seems to be coming to an end. And on that note, I want to go to a video, very, very funny video, clip number 14. This is a video that we showed the real video yesterday, the woman at the Jewish summit of some sort or another talking about how, you know, dangerous it was for people to take the lessons they learned from Holocaust class and apply it to modern conflicts, because that might give you the wrong idea of what you're supposed to come out of Holocaust class believing. And she actually says, we've been using Holocaust class to stop anti-Semitism, which again sort of gives the game away. It's not about the Holocaust. It's not about, you know, stopping a tragedy like this, a humanitarian disaster like the Holocaust ever again. It's about stopping people from disliking Jews. That's what anti-Semitism means. That's what you're doing if you're fighting anti-Semitism through Holocaust classes. So every school kid in America is by law obligated to go to the love Jews class, to the, you know, worship and never criticize Jew indoctrination period for at least a semester in high school, which is really insane and sick and wrong. Again, it's crazy. It's crazy. Be like if we had, just imagine it's another religion, please. Would you do that for 10 seconds and then decide whether you're in favor or against this thing? Just imagine if the Catholics, you know, used a massive lobbying and blackmail effort to get past the story of the Crusades. And then you've got Catholic priests on camera going, you know, we said it's about history and, you know, the Crusades, but really it's a, you know, pro-Christian indoctrination class that we've, you know, legally imposed on America. It would be obvious that this is a violation of the separation of church and state, and it never would be allowed. For some reason, Jews get away with it. As if their religion isn't a religion and should just be taught as if it's, you know, basic morality or something. It's not. It's a different religion than the one that we celebrate. So let's go to clip number 14 here, because this is the woman talking about how Holocaust class is backfiring on Israel and somebody else responding to it in a very funny way. Let's watch.
Because they learn about big, strong Nazis hurting weak, emaciated Jews. And they think, oh, anti-Semitism is like anti-black racism. It's not surprising that they think, oh, I know, the lesson of the Holocaust is you fight Israel. You fight the big, powerful people hurting the weak people.
I think people are deliberately misunderstanding what Sarah Hurwitz is trying to say with these comments. She's saying that the Nazis weren't bad because they were a large group of people picking on a small group of people like the Jewish people. They were bad because of the fact that the Jews didn't deserve it. And I think that's important to realize when you think about how many Arabs deserve it.
That's the thing. Holocausts are not inherently bad. It's only bad if the group of people who are being killed didn't deserve it. There are groups of people out there who, if you kill them en masse, it's good. Because some people, if given the chance, would kill large groups of people. How awful is that? Some of these people, Arabs, Blacks, some of them would kill everybody, so we gotta kill them. It's not Holocaust if it's good, if it's bad people. Some bad people deserve it. People every day are seeing Palestinians being killed, and that is because they're looking at it on social media. And then I have all the data that says that's okay. What you're seeing is good. So people are like, I don't want to see the data. I have to look at this video, and I seem obscene. I have crunched the numbers. And the numbers say this is good and fair. We need more data. We have to build a bar graph so high up it reaches the sun, and it blocks out the signal from the internet. But even then, they will be like, I still have my memories. And we need to stop the memories.
That is what they're saying. That is literally what they're saying. Holocausts aren't bad if they're against the right people. There's certain people that deserve it, okay? It's just not us. Like, great. Yeah, it's great. Actually, it was great. I don't know who that guy was, but very funny stuff. I don't know if I have time for, I think I have time for one more. Clip 21 here. Yeah, let's go to clip 21 here. We're about to welcome Tiffany Cianci, but this is a woman from North Carolina talking about how there's all these sob stories about illegal immigrants, and it's sort of going the opposite way for her. This is what a lot of people are learning when they see that North Carolina is 1/6 of their population is foreign born. And turns out there's no traffic if there aren't illegals. Let's watch.
So I keep seeing all of these videos out of Charlotte, North Carolina, about how the city has practically shut down because ICE came to town. And I see all of these videos about all of these job sites that are practically empty because none of the workers showed up, and stores that are empty because none of the customers showed up, and how 15% of public school children didn't come to school the next day because they're afraid of being deported. That's 1 in 6 kids, by the way. And I think all these stories are supposed to make me feel really bad. Like, look at all of these people that are being affected by the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. Like, yeah, look at all these people. Look at all of these children of people who shouldn't even be in this country, who are being educated in taxpayer-funded American schools with resources that could be going to American children while our math and literacy rates go through the floor. Look at all of these jobs that could be going to Americans, but all of these businesses are benefiting from practically slave labor. Look at how massive and pervasive this problem has become because you had presidents like Joe Biden just letting people in a tidal wave, and now we got to figure out how to untangle this ball of yarn. Yeah, look at all of these people. That's kind of the point.
Yeah, that's from at Red Wave CG on TikTok, and she's exactly right. And again, you want to see some scenes out of North Carolina? Let's go to clip number 19 and go to clip number 20. Go ahead and roll these background here. This is not Mexico. This is North Carolina. This is Charlotte, North Carolina. Bunch of foreign flags. Bunch of foreign people taking over the streets. Let's go to the next one now. Clip 20. Again, not Mexico, North Carolina. This is Charlotte, North Carolina, when Trump tries to crack down on immigration. This is how scared they are. Well, they're all hiding. They're all having to hide fear of Trump. In reality, they are doing street shutdowns, waving the Mexican flag. So I think we need a much, 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 much more significant response to the invasion. I think we need military on the ground treating all these people like what they are, foreign invaders who aren't American, don't belong here, have no rights, and should be expelled. That's just me. But that's just me, an American. We're going to be joined by Tiffany Cianci in just a minute. I do want to tell you about the Black Friday came early sale at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Buy one, get one free on all supplements. It's the biggest sale we've ever done. The supplements are incredible, whether it's the Ultramethylene Blue, the Life Ultimate Life Force, the Bovine Colostrum Plus. I mean, they're incredible. Plus, we have the new Hat of the Month Club. We have the Christmas sweaters available now, and all apparel is 25% off for a limited time. I got one here to show you. I got a very nice hoodie pullover from TheAlexJonesStore.com with Santa on it, looking festive. It's it says Santa's Choice, America First. Very high quality, of course. You can get this as the perfect gift for the info warrior in your life. You're running out of time. Christmas is coming up fast. Go now to TheAlexJonesStore.com. It's the best time ever to get supplements or apparel at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Everything we do is the tip of the spear. You are the tip of the spear when you spread the word, when you pray for us, when you buy products. So listen, we have shortfalls, and they're not even that big, but I understand the economy's totally shot. Our audience is as big as it's ever been, and back when the economy was going and we had an audience this big, we'd be in high cotton and I'd be able to expand. Right now, I'm just trying to stay on air. So I need you to make the decision to go to TheAlexJonesStore.com right now and take advantage of the biggest sale ever. Black Friday came early. That's right. Black Friday has come early. We always launch it the weekend after before Black Friday. Be a little different. Black Friday comes early. Mega sale, the biggest sale ever. Buy one, get one free on all supplements. The Irish Sea Moss, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Bovine Colostrum, and dozens of other amazing products. This is the biggest sale we've ever done. Ends Friday, November 28th. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement for free. Normally, it's buy one bottle of Irish Sea Moss, get another bottle of Irish Sea Moss, or buy one bottle of Methylene Blue, get another bottle. No, this is add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement free. You can mix and match any of our amazing supplements together. Don't miss out. This offer ends Friday, November 28th. Visit thealexstore.com today and fuel your body, mind, and power the info war. Take advantage of this amazing deal while supplies last. And here's another little tidbit that makes this a total loss leader when you use it. If you go to alexjonesapp.com and download the Droid or Apple app for free, that are the top apps, just in the last few months we launched it, folks at Bigly, the Alex Jones channel, the Alex Jones network, it's the same shopping cart on the app for your desktop or phone. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top. So everybody should get the app and should definitely use that. But if you want to support us more, get more funds in, then don't use the app and get the additional 20% off. I'm serious. It's like a form of a donation. When I tell you that I need your support, it's absolutely critical. This is the most critical time.
Alex Jones.
How would you describe him?
He's a hugely influential conspiracy theorist.
His ravings are untethered from reality.
It's a nasty piece of work, but I think he's also a deflating windbag.
He's not right in the head.
I'm very pro-free speech, and the word dangerous is used far too liberally. In his case, I think it's actually justified. Yeah.
Could he be a threat to American democracy?
Everyone thinks he's a crazy motherfucker, and they never heard him talk. They think he's just nuts. And he is crazy, he is. But you gotta be crazy to stand in front of the world and put your ass on the line and say the things he's saying. So you gotta be a little crazy. It's like a rock star, like Axl Rose. Oh, he's crazy. Yeah, he's Axl fucking Rose.
There is a war for your mind.
Information is the unlock.
Information war.
I come to you with a spring in my step, a song in my heart, emotionally and spiritually refreshed, because you know how, as humans, we have to accept the fact that sometimes bad things happen to good people? Well, by the grace of God, sometimes bad things happen to Alex Jones.
That's a good thing.
The despicable and ridiculous Alex Jones
deserves every minute of torture.
I don't like giving people like Alex Jones a platform, but what do you do? He's out there.
Tucker Carlson continues to fawn over Jones, calling him
one of the most important truth tellers in America today.
What does it mean for the future of InfoWars?
InfoWars.com.
This is InfoWars, right?
I think everybody wants to know, will he be shut down?
This verdict shuts down Alex Jones? Good. I guess the good guys just won the InfoWars.
He is the number one threat to these people.
Take the bullhorn away.
You know, kicked us off the internet, tried to ban our IP, got banks to cancel us, lawsuits, censorship, investigations from the FBI. I mean, everything has been thrown at us.
Take him out. Make certain he can't rebuild the platform.
That's what matters.
I hope that we never see someone like him again.
InfoWars.com lives. People can come to my show every day, 11 a.m. Central, and they can hear what I'm actually saying, Piers, versus what you're trying to put in my mouth.
You got God's warriors coming together like the SWAT team of free thought.
It has become more than ever a litmus test as to whether you get what's going on in the world or not.
This is InfoWars, right?
If you don't get what Alex Jones represents, if you can't recognize that Alex Jones is the real deal, you don't get anything.
We're going to give this information on InfoWars.
So no concept of the wider perspective here. If you still can't see through the lies that are telling you that Alex Jones is somehow not who he says he is, you still can't get it.
We've been fighting this battle for a long time, Alex, and we just got to salute you as a Christian and as American, because you paved the way to make braver soldiers like us today.
This is about good versus evil and God fighting the devil. You got to pick a side now.
InfoWarriors.
All we ever do is promote human freedom of every race, color, and creed. Our message is really imperative for everyone to understand, like, this is the way out. It's about understanding that every single human being has a right to live their life the way they want, unmolested and uncontrolled by those with more power than them. So no matter what they say about us, no matter how they want to portray us, just know that InfoWars really represents something totally unique, totally special, and an existential threat to the most vicious, evil, totalitarian, and importantly, miserable people on the earth. Who is the number one player in all of this? Who is the number one symbol of alternative media and, you know, internet content? It is
the legend that is out. Alex Jones, and you were fighting on the front line, and now we're here with you. You got some other superheroes, part of the Avenger movie, fighting for Christ and free speech.
Folks, we really are going to save this country, and we really are going to save this planet.
On InfoWars, think about that for a second.
They're going to remember Alex Jones. They're going to remember InfoWars.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Sea Moss was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of, like, thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the Sea Moss because it's a thyroid issue. And the Sea Moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formulas. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good.
You can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of The War Room is on, and I'm in studio with the one and only bubbly little fairy of doom herself, Tiffany Cianci. She is, of course, an activist raising awareness about the critical threat of private equity and that the threat that it poses to American society. She's raising the alarm and putting pressure on private equity firms. You can follow her on X at TheVinoMom. That's T-H-E-V-I-N-O mom, or by going to TiffanyCianci.com. She's also on TikTok, of course, which is, I think, your main platform, right?
Yep, sure is, at Tiffany Cianci.
Well, welcome back. Good to have you here. Last time you were here, the interview went viral like 10 times over, so we got a high bar to meet here.
I feel like every time I come in, the bar gets a little higher, and we keep meeting the moment, so let's do it.
Okay, we got like five different topics to talk about. Which one do you want to start with? Private equity sort of involved in all of them. And I think that's the reason it goes viral is because people have no idea. I had no idea the danger of private equity, the horror of private equity. I mean, it's insane. Should we read some of these?
Yeah.
We mentioned this one last time you were here. Private equity is behind 70% of large U.S. bankruptcies in the first quarter of 2025.
Yep.
70%.
Well, that's up 7% from 2024, where they were responsible for 63% of the large bankruptcies. And it has reached a new record for bankruptcies for private equity-owned firms 3 years in a row, and now we're in the fourth year. It just keeps going up because that's the nature of what pirate-like private equity is intended to do. It creates a death spiral.
That's what I'm – as we go through all these stories, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it's like it's so – evil and bad and insane how bad it all is. It's like there's got to be a new term for this. I was saying like Satan equity. Like there's got to be something that we can call this that in some way expresses how insane this is. Private equity backed companies only comprise 11% of the GDP, but 70% of the bankruptcies. Like that's, it's just a bankruptcy machine.
And what's terrifying about that is that people think like, oh, it's a bankruptcy. It's a big company. Only big companies are going to be hurt. When the bankruptcies are filed, you have to look at who's hurt by that. If you're talking about like a Francesca's or like a store that buys jewelry made by a small business, the small businesses are the debtors.
Yep.
They're the ones that will never be made whole and will also go out of business. But more than that, every time you see a major bankruptcy by a private equity owned company, like let's say Joann's, we had Joann's, Party City, Big Lots, back to back to back, right?
Yep.
What happens is that, yes, their large space gets vacant, but every small business that moved into those parking lots, relying on them as their anchor, also falls like dominoes in the months and years that follow, because they no longer have the pull of a big anchor store that has brand recognition and is known well to draw people in. Or, like, you know, sometimes you'll see like a Spirit Halloween comes in for a couple months and gives them a reprieve, right? Or you'll see like a furniture pop up in one of these stores. That is not bringing in 600 customers a day.
Right.
And these small businesses are going to fall too. It's a domino effect that has horrifying ripples across our entire economy.
Well, but then private equity can scoop in and swoop up some of those at rock bottom prices. I'm seeing dollar signs here.
You know, and they actually are going to do it with a large company too. Everything that Joann's was then sold off. All the intellectual property ended up going to Michaels for pennies. And now they're selling stuff with the Joann's logo on it that has horrifying quality compared to what we could get when we were there. Right? You can look at Toys R Us. Somebody came in and bought the Toys R Us logo, and now they're trying to revive Toys R Us. But up until now, all they've done is license it to other people to stick on toys at sub quality. They licensed it to Macy's to add in during the holiday season. And that was somebody that just was probably involved in the deal, came through a friend and bought up the IP for whatever was left at the very end for a dollar or two. And then you have other private equity firms swooping in. So there was a franchise group that had bought a whole bunch of franchise systems, just like the one I was fighting, Unleash Brands. And they had bought up Sylvan Learning Centers. Well, Sylvan Learning Centers had quite a few scandals. They had some fraud scandals, but they also had some child
abuse.
I don't know the right way to say what I can say. They had some child grooming scandals. Mm-hmm. Some of their franchisees like fled to Spain and got caught by Interpol after they abused children in their facilities. And so nobody wanted to buy them. When the franchise large group went out of business, that bankruptcy allowed the private equity firm I'm fighting to come in and swoop them up after they couldn't buy a company for years. They rolled to get that because nobody else would make an offer. So they sell to one another. It's all so incestuous. And every time that somebody goes out of business, it's a great opportunity for the next guy, except for all of the employees, all of the creditors, all of the people that were in those parking lots, and every single truck driver that used to work for them, or every single line booking company that used to book their truckers to haul stuff across the country. Every single one of the people that provided their shopping carts they owe money to, their cleaning services. Those are small businesses that are left with nothing because they are not the first in line creditors.
Yeah, it's not like Joann's goes out of business and some other person is like, well, a gap in the market, better fill this up. Because, yeah, you know, it's like, well, you know, Joann's failed. What do you think you can do better, you know, in this? It is just so destructive. And this is the crazy thing. It's like, okay, I guess it benefits the private equity owners in the short term, but it is so relentlessly destructive. And it's about way more than money, folks. Some of the stats you were telling me about ERs was blowing my mind. This is from justcareusa.org. Emerging data reveal high ER death rates at private equity-owned hospitals. So private equity is buying up hospitals, and people are dying at an increased rate of 13% in ER, but it gets worse than that.
Yeah, so first of all, they can buy just the ER. They don't even have to buy the hospital. And then their ER doesn't work with the hospital, which is a big part of the problem, right? Or they can buy the whole hospital. But worse than that, if you have a surgery at a private equity-owned hospital, your risk of death after surgery is now estimated to be 42 to 45% higher than at any hospital that is not owned by private equity. Like I was telling you, if you knew that you were going to get in one brand of car and your chance of dying in that car were 45% higher, nobody would touch that car.
Right.
Period. And yet we're not allowed to know who owns these hospitals. We're not allowed to see when these deals are done. Nobody will pass a law to let us see what we're actually walking into with our lives, our children's lives, our parents' lives. And nobody is holding these people accountable as they also bankrupt all of the rural emergency rooms and hospitals across the U.S., which is leading to countless deaths right now. There's a whole swath of private equity-owned urgent care centers, trauma centers, and like mobile or like regional emergency rooms that were bankrupted by a private equity firm where the president went and bought himself a $300 million jet and rode off into the sunset. And now there are senior citizens, pregnant women that are now 3 hours from the closest place they could go for help in America right now. And they're dying on the way because that is also a 3 hour round trip each direction,
right,
for an ambulance or a caregiver. And so it's really hard to articulate how dangerous this is. It's much scarier at the nursing home stats, where you see the risk of death as like literally like 1 in 10.
Whoa.
It's a massive increase.
I mean, 43%, that is not an insubstantial increase. And it's like, is it just because they cut staff, they cut provisions? Like what could lead to a 45% increase in in deaths in a surgery like that. It's like you'd have to try to achieve that.
So actually the main thing is, so like actually about 20 years ago, there was a period where a lot of children were dying after cardiac surgeries and they couldn't figure out why. At hospital after hospital, there were these really elevated like death rates, and they brought in pit crews from Formula One teams to analyze at these really exceptional hospitals how the handoff was causing deaths. And what was happening is they didn't have good systems and enough bodies on hand to hand everything off without causing infection, touching the wrong things, bumping the wrong things, ensuring the continuity of care and handover from the surgical team to the ICU team was strong enough. Well, what happens is as soon as a private equity firm comes in, they immediately cut staffing. They cut the standard and quality of the products in the hospital. They're going to, and they're not just going to cut staffing. They're going to cut the expensive staffing. So you're losing your best nurses, your most seasoned nurses. They might fire all of the really seasoned people and hire in people fresh out of school, right? And then they're going to stretch them thinner and thinner and thinner. I've seen recovery centers for senior citizens coming out of surgery that have one RN, just an RN, overnight for 65 patients. Whoa. 65 patients.
And there's no way to know which hospitals are owned by private equity and which aren't.
I mean, if they used to be public, you can find out details of a sale. But if it's changed again after that, no. Unless they've issued a press release, which they rarely do, it's very difficult to track. However, we could pass a law that says we get to know that. We could pass a transparency law that says we get to know where we take our children to the doctor, to the orthodontist. We should be able to know where we take our pets to the vet. We should know this.
It's just insane. And I want to get into some of the things that are happening, because there are people that are aware of this and are helping to fight back on it. But again, just sticking with the hospital stuff, like this, people need to know this. This could save your life. Researchers believe that significant staffing and salary cuts, as much as 18%, are the likely reason of the rise in emergency room patient deaths. And they say that private equity's profit-making strategies are especially dangerous for people with Medicare, who tend to be more vulnerable than younger patients. The researchers analyzed 10 years of Medicare claims data. They looked at more than 1 million emergency room visits and 121,000 hospitalizations in intensive care units in 49 private equity-owned hospitals, and compared patient health outcomes to those in 293 non-private equity-owned hospitals. And they found a increased risk of death by 13% in the ERs alone. That's not including the surgeries you were talking about earlier. So, like, to me, this would be an argument that, like, they should never own hospitals.
Never.
Like, forget the law saying that it has to be exposed. How about private equity is never allowed to own hospitals?
It's been a constant complaint for a lot of us, as we've seen insurance companies able to reject things doctors say patients need. We say non-doctors shouldn't be able to practice medicine. Private equity firms sure as heck should not be allowed to practice medicine. And what we have is dollars and board members controlling the decision making that should be in the hands of doctors. And what they'll do is they'll put one doctor on the board to oversee 13 or 15 or 25 places, and that gets them through. That is insufficient, and our legislators should be doing something. I'm not somebody that thinks we need over regulation, but there are some things. If my daughter is going to a hospital and she is 8 years old and she's about to have surgery and she has a 43% higher chance of dying after that surgery, I want to know who owns that hospital.
Yeah.
I want to know.
And like, I'm obviously not a fan of government run healthcare. And I think we've seen how badly that can go in the sense that people will die, but also they'll just start killing you, like in Canada with MAID, because it's, you know, cheaper to kill somebody than to actually keep them on life support. So I don't like that. But at the same time, I don't think hospitals are where you should be making money. I don't think it should be like you should be driven by how to squeeze the most amount of profit from this. I don't know how you build regulations to say that. I mean, it used to be that hospitals were funded by churches. Why, like here in Austin, we have St. David's, and like it used to be sort of a Christian charity type thing would support a lot of hospitals. But how are we allowing hospitals to be taken over by people whose only concern, not even that like it's they care about money more than patients, they seem not to care about patients at all, and they only care about exploiting it to the maximum degree. I would say that's not something we should let happen.
I mean, not only should, I mean, we absolutely should not be letting that happen, but it's not just that it's happening there. It's happening in so many places across our medical services, right? We're also seeing it in children's urgent care centers, pediatric offices. We're seeing it in tons of surgical centers, like outpatient surgical centers. You're seeing it in orthodontia. You're seeing a ton of it right now in ophthalmology, and those are surgical centers. We're seeing it all across a litany of different services in the medical field. And I don't know if you remember this when I first came on, but I mentioned to you in a prayer visit that when private equity started trying to decide how to spend their money. They wanted to spend it wisely when they thought a recession was coming, right? This was during 2020. And they said they were going to start only investing in the things we were emotionally committed to. That means that they wanted to invest in things that we would find a way to pay for no matter what. They said that if we couldn't afford it, we would borrow it. If we couldn't borrow it, we would steal it. If we couldn't steal it, we would sell something. They wanted those services exclusively. They wanted veterinary care. They wanted home services. They wanted medical services. They wanted funeral services. And as we get closer to what looks like a giant bubble in our economy, they are doubling down on that promise, and they are targeting specifically the things that serve our children, our parents, our pets, the things we love and care about, and they're doing it with malicious intent.
And they're doing it in a way that is monopolistic, so it's not like you can just choose somewhere else to go. They're buying up every, you know, every gym, every, I'm trying not to tease the youth
what's
sports
coming.
Thing
yeah.
is huge. Yeah. And we're going to get into that, but they monopolize these industries. So it's not like you can always just go to somewhere that's not owned by private equity.
And one of the things that I've been advocating for such a long time is that right now our antitrust laws are woefully outdated. They were conceived of in a time when nobody realized that we would have massive consolidation in regions. They were made so it was only nationally, and it was only if it was a cost passed along to the consumer. And that's why our FTC, even when Lena Khan was at the head of it, was having such a hard time going after, like, for instance, our technology companies, because the old laws were written for a time that never conceived of a digital world, never conceived of companies being so willing to collude, so willing to engage in antitrust-like behavior, right? They never conceived of that. And they never conceived of regional monopolies. That was never a thought for them. And so our laws have to be updated. But we have an absolutely incapable and unwilling Congress to move on anything that a billionaire isn't paying for at this point.
Right.
However, if you want to be on TikTok, we will definitely get that done.
Yeah.
No problem. If we want to send money overseas, got you. If a billionaire really needs you to sneak in some kind of immunity bill, no problem. But your citizens right now, what did he just, Trump just said that he's making the next year about affordability? Well, we could start by eliminating all of the monopolies. You could get Congress to just pass a single bill that targets all of the ways that monopolists are circumventing the original laws. And we could knock all pricing down immediately across the board. We could do it in a minute.
But we can't do it with the laws as they stand now.
We can't do it with the laws as they stand now. There was some interest in utilizing an old law that was kind of outdated called the Robinson-Patman Act. Alvaro Bedoya and Lena Khan were doing some really interesting work with that. And I still believe there's room there. That's a law that said that you couldn't have, like, two competitors collude to ice a smaller competitor out of pricing in the market. So, like, a beef supplier couldn't work with Walmart some grocery store, Kroger, to ice out a smaller grocery chain from pricing on meat because that was excluding a specific smaller company. That law, they saw some interesting ways to use it, but Trump fired all of them. And now we have a woefully understaffed Federal Trade Commission right now, a woefully understaffed antitrust. Right now they have 4,000 openings for lawyers at the DOJ.
Whoa.
Because they fired everybody that was there and was able to handle the cases we had, and now we're losing a bunch of them. And a bunch more lawyers are too afraid to go in because they keep firing everybody.
Right.
I know, because my husband's a federal attorney. And we've asked friends, do you want a job? We know they're hiring. And they're like, nope, we're good.
Right. Dang, yeah. And again, this is, you know, as much as I don't want the government involved in most of my life, if there's one place the government should be involved, it's with helping to combat corporations that are exploiting the Americans. I mean, I don't have the ability to stop this happening, but collectively, we should have the ability to stop this happening. I mean, we're like not even a quarter of the way into some of the stats that you've brought that are just mind-blowing what's happening. But they're buying up hospitals and people are dying at a massive rate. They're responsible for the vast majority of bankruptcies and the really vast majority of the big bankruptcies. I mean, it just seems like vampirism, maybe vampire equity would be a better way of putting this.
Yeah.
What is the benefit? Like, I get that, like, I guess people that own private equity can make a couple bucks by killing everybody, but, like, how has this been allowed to proliferate so much?
I mean, the reality is that every single president since Carter has expanded private equity's access to act in a really unethical way. It started off really small with Carter, with just a small expansion. Back then, you could only have 35 investors in private equity and only like up to $1 million. And each president since Carter, starting with Carter, he did it too, has expanded the oversight. Because back then, over 35 investors meant you had to file with the SEC and you had to have oversight from the federal government. Okay, and we move forward. Reagan only did a tiny expansion. A lot of people like to land him with every problem we have. But you can jump forward to President Clinton, where we had the largest expansion in American history with the repeal of Glass-Steagall. He went in and basically took almost all the guardrails off. It went up to like 1,000 investors and like unlimited money. And then, and at that point, we knew there were warning bells then. Like anybody who's ever seen the movie Pretty Woman, which our age group grew up watching, Edward, the main character by Richard Gere, was at a bad company doing bad things. He said, I buy big companies and I break them up and sell off the pieces and I make money. She goes, yeah, but what do you make? And he goes, I make money.
Right.
She goes, so you don't build anything? And he only became the good guy at the end when he decided to team up with American Ingenuity and build ships for America.
Right.
And he said, I don't like not making anything. I don't want to break things anymore. I want to build things. And he moved to the good side. We knew then with those warning bells under Clinton that this was bad. Right. That's when leverage buyouts became the norm and banking rules changed so that they were allowed to foist all of the debt onto the companies instead of the people that were taking out the debt.
Right.
We eliminated all liability. We did the same thing under Obama. Both of them did it with bipartisan Congresses and almost unanimous support. So it's not a, it's not like, oh, it was all Clinton's fault or it was Obama's fault. Every Republican voted for it too.
Right.
Right. And then we flash forward. Trump had actually tightened restrictions in his first term. And now he just gave them our 401ks to bail them out.
Yeah, that. And of course, we covered that when it happened. And it just, it's another just totally inexplicable advancement of this clearly just evil and destructive form of business.
Yeah, it really is. And there is so much we could do if they weren't paying so many members of Congress to do nothing.
Right.
There is so much we could do.
God, it's just unbelievably infuriating. And again, wait until you hear about the way they've taken over youth sports and other stuff. And look, this is one place where the left and right can come together.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that's in favor of this on the left or the right. I know we're going to talk about Chris Murphy. He's a Democrat, but like if he's going after private equity, then I'm on his team because we have to do something about this. And I don't know. I don't care whether you approach it from the side of like it's billionaires destroying things. Like if you hate billionaires and that's why you're going after it, fine. I want small businesses to thrive. That's why I hate what's going on. And I see the way it just systematically destroys small businesses, big businesses, successful businesses, kills people. I mean, it's crazy it's been allowed to go this far. So this is really an opportunity for unity.
Yeah,
for
really
Americans
is.
Versus whoever these people are.
This is a deep purple issue, and there is not a single working class American I have yet to meet that has said that they don't agree with doing something to stop the absolute strip mining of every... It's not just that they're strip mining the wealth of our communities or our rural agriculture land, too. They're buying up that, too. They're buying up all kinds of things in rural America. It's not just that they're strip mining the wealth. It's not just that they're strip mining the intellectual property. They're strip mining American excellence. We used to be a country that built things. And at this point, every time a business starts to achieve any type of excellence and starts to move onto the world stage, they are immediately swooped upon. And then we break it off and sell it up to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
Right. And it begins its every 3-year flip death spiral. Because that's what's going to happen. As soon as they're in there, things will get better for a minute. They'll get a bunch of money out of it. Then they'll flip it to the next guy and the next guy. They don't want to build anything in America. All they're doing is trying to extract as much as they can from us. And when America is left bereft, bankrupt, nothing left to us, they will simply cash out and move to the next country where they will wash, rinse, repeat, and start again.
Yeah.
We need to stop it here.
It really, and like you're not overblowing the threat. It really is that voracious and that sort of greedy and just sucking everything in. And they never have to justify what they're doing because nobody's questioning them. No, you know, nobody's standing up to them. We have a few people now, you know, becoming aware of it. You obviously are leading the charge, but it's like you would think that at least they'd have to go, no, we can do this because look at how efficient we've made things and look at how, you know, because we have all these other companies, we can make things better, but they never even have to make that argument.
Nope. That's the thing about private equity is it is private. There is no oversight. There is no questioning. No one ever calls them before the House oversight committees. Nobody drags them in for Senate hearings because they spend big on lobbying.
Yeah.
Big, big money on lobbying. And I don't know if you, I think I talked to you about this. When Trump said he was going to give them access to our 401ks, which I fought so hard against, they started a $100 million commercial campaign that told everybody how good they are for all of us. Like they were going to sway us on this. Nobody bought it. Not for a second.
It's just, it is unbelievably insane. We're not even halfway into it, folks. Stay with us. More on the other side. It's going to blow your mind. If you have a kid in sports, you absolutely need to see what comes next. It's outrageous. Stay tuned.
I'm making this announcement on Friday, November 21st, 2025. And this is the biggest sale in the history of our sponsor, Bigly, thealexjonesstore.com, with the very best supplements, widest selection of Patriot apparel. Right now, until next Friday, you can get any of the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, the bovine colostrum, and they're all the best, the turmeric, the list goes on and on. Where you get one bottle of whatever supplement you want, and then you can pick any other supplement you want. So you can buy a supplement that costs way less than one of the other supplements and get that even more expensive, more, quote, high-end product that has more ingredients free with it. This is a massive deal. And every day we're running flash sales that change each day on top of it. We're doing this because we know a lot of you have been on the fence about the products. You've heard the rave reviews. We know if you use them, you're going to love them. You'll be a repeat customer. So some of these are a loss leader. We're also doing it for the fans that have supported us so much so you get a better deal. But bottom line, we're fundraising right now. The bad guys are very close to shutting down InfoWars. They have the state receiver in. They're setting up an auction sometime the next month. I'll imagine it'll be like the federal auction where they don't let good guys try to bid. I'm not accusing them of anything wrong yet, but we're just going to see what happens. Let's just say this. I don't have any faith that good guys will keep us on the air and be allowed to bid. So I expect we'll be shut down by the new year. But that's okay because we've got the Alex Jones Network. We've got all these new systems thanks to your support that have been set up and even more being built. But that's why the support is so critical at thealexjonesstore.com, because it doesn't just fund InfoWars as we fight to stay on here, but the new infrastructure. So it is critical to take action. And again, I don't own thealexjonesstore.com. I don't own the Alex Jones Network. Bigly does. And so I'm just going to work there, be the news director, and we're going to continue on. And they can attack me till the cows come home, but we are going to continue to fight. The only variable of myself and my crew staying in the fight, because we'll never give up, never back down, never give in, we could give out, is you supporting us while you get great products at the same time. So now's the time to take action. You see the crescendo of the forces of good versus evil just rising against each other, as it always does historically. We're in this major time of change, the fourth turning. The Democrats are calling for open civil war, saying Trump's a tyrant, telling the military not to follow any of his orders. This is a time we need to stay on the air. Whether it's InfoWars, the Alex Jones Network, you know the coordinates. You share them everywhere. You take the clips. You take the articles. You take the video links. And that will change the world. But to keep us on air, we need the money so we sell you great products that really work. So it's a symbiotic relationship. Just like a good restaurant wants to have good service, high-quality food at reasonable prices. So you want to come back. There's a line out the door. The restaurant with nobody going in it shuts down because they have crappy service. You've just got to come into our restaurant. You just got to come in and try the ultramethylene blue or the sea moss or the other products and see how great it is. That's why we're saying buy one bottle, get any other bottle you want free and other huge discounts right now at thealexjonesstore.com. This is the most critical moment in InfoWars 28 years. These are great products, so take action now. Action is the essence of victory. That's why we've come so far together. You're the reason the InfoWars existed. It will continue on despite a URL, because I am the InfoWar. You are the InfoWar. We are the InfoWar. We are telling the truth and taking on their lies and winning. And yeah, they're striking back. And boy, we're in the thick of a big war here, but you can see they're losing. To paraphrase Patton, if you're tired and you're hungry, you've been fighting for days, just know this, the other guy you're fighting is even more tired and more hungry. So punch and fight that much harder in the info war. Take action now. TheAlexJonesStore.com, and God bless you all.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. We're talking about private equity with Tiffany Cianci. I want to let you know, folks, we are not owned by private equity. We are a small business that's thriving because of the support of our customers at thealexjonesstore.com. Support us so we don't have to be auctioned off to BlackRock and sold for parts. Go support us at thealexjonesstore.com. It's a Black Friday came early sale. It's absolutely massive. The biggest sale we've ever done. Buy one, get one on all the supplements. Methylene Blue, Life Force, Ultimate Burn. I mean, they're all incredible. Get them now. Two for one. Buy one, get one free. And I guess you can buy a cheap one and get a free one, a more expensive one for free. I don't know. I don't understand our sales. They seem too good to be true, but they're true. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. All apparel is 25% off as well. So stock up for Christmas today. Thealexjonesstore.com and help us get through this sort of uncertain time as we relaunch after having been destroyed illegally. But it's a story for another time. We're talking about other companies going bankrupt here with Tiffany Cianci. Follow her on X at The Vino Mom. She's also at TiffanyCianci.com, and you can find her on TikTok, of course, where she's live streaming right now. How
she
you doing,
is.
TikTok?
Hi, TikTok.
Oh my God, where do we even go from here? Let's stick with the hospital stuff for now.
Yeah.
Chris Murphy is talking about this, slams Prospect Medical, private equity in hospitals. And then we'll get into the pesticide stuff and the nursing home stuff. You were talking to me during the break about the Carlyle Group, nursing homes and private equity, a match made in hell. What happened with these nursing homes that were bought up by the Carlyle Group?
So Carlyle Group had assembled the largest collection of nursing homes and rehab recovery facilities for senior citizens, primarily in the United States several years back. And their death rates were significantly higher than any of their non-private equity owned counterparts. There were a bunch of investigations that were launched because Medicare and Medicaid pay for almost all nursing care. Literally 90% of nursing home facility payments come from Medicare or Medicaid. Right. 90%. Right. And so there were a bunch of investigations that were launched by like state attorney generals and things like that. And what ended up happening was after several people had died through very nefarious circumstances, just horrifying conditions, one nurse to 65, 70 patients on a night, grossly understaffed. The people that were in these nursing homes were like six times as likely to sit in their own feces or urine and not have help going to the bathroom. They weren't being bathed. They had higher broken bone rates. What ended up happening is overnight, they just closed up shop because they had cashed out enough in dividends and they bankrupted all of the nursing homes. And tens, like just 7,000 in Pennsylvania alone, but like tens of thousands of senior citizens that were in recovery or in permanent hospice care in medical beds were kicked out the doors on 24 hours notice with no care left to help them because the nurses weren't being paid and they were homeless. Now, some of these facilities were actually long-term living facilities with nursing care, where people had given their life savings to them to live there for the rest of their lives.
Right. You pay one lump sum at the beginning, because obviously you don't know how long you're going to live, so you just say, I'll pay the maximum amount, and then I'm just here forever. And then when they bankrupt, what happens?
Then what happens is you're out. Your money's gone because you're too low on the credit like totem pole.
Right.
And we're seeing this more recently. That was, a few years ago. But we're seeing this more recently. It's happening right now with a bunch of senior citizens, long-term care living situations where private equity firms flip. They do the flip I always talk about where the first one holds them for 3 years and they flip it to the next. Mm. And what's happening is they're forcing them out by raising, like if there was a tiny caveat in the contract that says we could raise your like HOA fees, they're using it to raise them as much as like $7,000 a month.
Whoa.
So that they force them into homelessness through like this tiny loophole. And these people are on fixed incomes. They've given them their life savings.
Right.
They get none of it back and they're out with nowhere to go and they have nowhere to live. They've lost their life savings. They can't afford an extra $7,000 a month for an HOA care fee and they're homeless.
And then
overnight.
And then of course we know from our previous talks, the reason these companies don't get sued into oblivion is because they all have these private adjudication clauses in their contracts.
They all have these arbitration agreements and these non-disclosure agreements. But more than that, private equity is exceptionally good at creating shell corporations.
Mm.
And so what they do is they say, like in the thing up on the board about Carlyle, there was a woman who died, their family sued them, and they were able to get themselves, Carlyle Group, removed from that lawsuit because they said, whoa, 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 we didn't own this. We just managed an investment that did.
Whoa.
And they got themselves removed from the lawsuit, and so there was no one left to sue.
This is the thing. I mean, it's like the consequences are horrifying, and then they just completely avoid any responsibility for it whatsoever.
Correct. There's never accountability for these private equity firms. My lawsuit, I've been in litigation with a private equity firm. I think they sued me like 9 times now. Like, literally, they keep suing me. They violate injunctions to sue me all the time. And in one of my cases, I did actually get a verdict in my favor. I got them found guilty of defamation. They were lying about me to, like, the press and people, right? They were lying about me. And they even with getting that tiny verdict, they were still able to convince our paid judge that it wasn't worth anything, that my reputation was not worth anything, so I shouldn't win anything.
Oh, my God. They
always find a way out.
Folks, go back and watch the other episodes we've done with Tiffany to where we talk about the way arbitration is used and the way that the judges are being paid off. I mean, it is so corrupt, and it's a parallel legal system that they control that is being set up in America right now and is being used right now. Like, not set up. It is set up, and it's being used already.
That actually runs in a private equity-like way, too, though. Arbitrations, these forced arbitrations, right, are run by a single monopoly called AAA that like governs 93% of all of these secret courtrooms, and they're funded entirely by corporations, and private equity firms are some of their largest clients.
And the judges are not obligated to stick to the law.
No, they can make up their own law. They can do whatever they want. And if you go into that courtroom, if you were in a regular courtroom, on average, if you get there, you've got about a 50-50 shot of winning something in these cases. Mm. You have a 3% chance of winning in an arbitration. 3%. Wow. 3%.
Yep. And here we're seeing the, what happened to you when private equity came for the toddler gyms. Let's talk about, youth sports.
Oh, that's actually a good segue.
Yeah. Right. From Jacobin, private equity's new venture, youth sports. And, I understand Chris Murphy is also, concerned about this. He's talking about the hospitals, but, private equity is buying up youth sports. Like, what, how much money in youth sports is there?
$40 billion a year.
Oh my God. Okay. I had no idea.
Well, it shouldn't be that much. What happened is private equity firms got together and did an analysis of what they thought they could make it worth in 5 years, and they thought they could make it between $40 and $50 billion. So what they did was they bought up a bunch of recreational leagues that kids could actually afford to play in, and they started squeezing and monopolizing them. So they consolidated and consolidated, but they didn't stop at just buying the leagues. They also had, like, sister, like, umbrella groups of private equity firms buy up all of the sports venues for the kids. They bought up all of the sports jersey making companies. They bought up all of the sports equipment providers, and then they made tying arrangements again, this is monopolistic, anti-competitive behavior.
Right.
They created tying arrangements between all of them so that they control the entire supply chain, and now they can charge whatever they want. They've also done an excellent job of convincing parents that your kids will never get into a good school if they don't have a very diverse resume when they're headed towards college. So you need sports, but you can't do it in a rec league. I was able to get scholarships because I had been in rec leagues as a kid.
Right.
I had been in recreation ballet and got a ballet scholarship, right, to an art school. They don't have that anymore. It's dying off in most communities because the rec leagues can't afford the venues anymore.
And it's crazy the amount that they're exploiting. Like, okay, if I'm playing devil's advocate, I'm hearing this, I'm like, well, okay, but people, if they can buy these up and, the kids are still playing sports, like, what's the big deal? But it's like cartoonish the level to which they are crushing the rights of parents to just squeeze a little bit more money,
like,
out of them.
It's literally like egomaniacal maniac level.
Yeah.
Like, it's horrible. They're like supervillains.
And so what was it, Chris Murphy that his son played in a hockey league? Because this is hockey league. This is,
yeah,
little league. I mean, these are the sports that we all grew up playing, are now being centralized and monopolized by private equity. And it's just, it's the normal sports. It's hockey. It's whatever. And so what happened, Chris Murphy, I guess, representative from, is it Connecticut?
Yeah, Connecticut.
Goes to his son's little league hockey game, and what happened?
So he was filming his son playing hockey, and a representative for, I think it's like the Bears, I don't know what it's called, the Bear Sports Group, this private equity company came over to talk to him and said, excuse me, sir, like, what are you doing? And he says, well, I'm taking a picture of my son. And they said, you don't have a subscription for that. And he says, what do you mean I don't have a subscription? They say, you're not allowed to record your children in our venues without paying this hundreds of dollars cost for a subscription to photograph your own child. And he said, and if I keep photographing my child? They said, well, it was in the agreement you signed to sign him up for the league that he will fall out of playoff contention. We will give demerits against the team for every parent that photographs their child, so they no longer qualify for playoff contention. It's sick.
So private equity buys a hockey league, and then the parent, like a children's little league hockey league, and then the children or the parents cannot take pictures of their children playing sports, or else they punish the team and remove their ability to play in the playoffs.
In this case, I think they bought the venue, and then like a sister private equity firm bought the team. But yes.
Yeah, Black Bear Sports Group, an emerging youth hockey empire and the largest owner-operator of hockey rinks in the country, is among the private equity-backed companies that are amassing a chokehold on recording and streaming youth sports. At Black Bear-owned ice rinks, parents cannot record, post, or live stream their kids' hockey games online per official company policy, according to the staff at those venues. Some rink attendants say they will confiscate attendees' recording devices if they find them. That is insane. That is insane.
They have even taken Meta glasses.
Oh yeah, I'm not kidding.
They're paying people to stay in these venues
and look for people trying to take pictures of their children playing sports.
And they also have financial penalties if they catch you, in addition to like the team penalties. This is not like one sport, right? They didn't just buy up the hockey rinks, which this particular private equity firm actually did buy like a monopoly on all of the ice rinks in that region. But they're also buying up the soccer venues. They're buying up everything to do with lacrosse. They're buying up everything to do with baseball. Baseball is horrifying. Like a travel team baseball team now can cost you $8,000 a season, $10,000 a season, because they own everything. They own all of the equipment suppliers. They have control over, and it's not just like, they also control all of like the uniforms, but it's worse because they might send you to your mandatory uniform company. They could pass along savings to you. They could make it so poor kids can afford this. But instead what they do is they hike the prices way up, and the difference in what it actually costs is kicked back to the private equity firm in the form of something called a rebate revenue. So they're making money on every single possible facet, and they have iced all poor kids out of sports and recreation in the United States. It is disgusting. And this is another reason why we are suffering on the national stage, why we have fallen in the rankings in the Olympics year after year, because we are not cultivating the best of our talent. We're only cultivating the wealthiest at this point. And that means that as America, once again, private equity has gotten in the way of like establishing American excellence on the world stage.
Right.
And other countries are laughing at us.
Right.
They are laughing at us because we are okay allowing these billionaires to get richer and richer and richer, while we let the actual businesses, the actual athletes, the actual music, like instrument players that would be exceptional, get iced out of everything by these billion-dollar companies that are literally strip mining the heart and soul of Middle America.
I don't think you're overstating it. I think that's exactly what it is. And again, you just go from, okay, they're kicking, you know, old people in hospice out of their nursing homes, and they're taking over hospitals, and the death rate goes up 43%, and they're taking over youth sports and charging parents to take pictures of their own children. And it's just, this is the thing. It's like vampire equity, Satan equity. This isn't private equity. This is something else. This is like so ubiquitous and so just obviously, I would call it anti-capitalistic, but like it's such an abuse of our system. I don't understand how there's not more resistance to this.
You know, a lot of people don't recognize that monopolies were considered so dangerous to the underlying fabric of the American like system and republic that they are the only laws in the United States that have a civil and criminal penalty that are allowed to be enforced by parties other than the state.
Oh.
So the problem is it's a very expensive thing to do. But in addition to the DOJ's antitrust division or an attorney general's ability to do it, antitrust laws are the only laws in the U.S. where regular citizens can bring an antitrust case. The problem is we can't afford to. If we all got together and pooled, $100 million, they would spend $200 million. If we pooled $200 million, they would spend $300 million, because that is still better as a cost of doing business when you are bringing in billions. It is hard to understand how much $1 billion is.
Yeah.
You could literally spend $27,000, I think, like a minute, and you wouldn't spend $1 billion in like 10 years.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know, you're right. When we throw around these words like billion, it's hard to get a grasp of even what we're talking about. But just on the individual level, you're a kid, you play sports, you don't know how much it costs, you don't really care. Then you become an adult and you go to pay for your kids' sports. You're like, is this how expensive it always was? And the answer is no. The answer is like, this is not normal. People just accept it. They just go, whew, gee, well, okay. I mean, things sure are more expensive than when I was a kid. But it's like, no, they are deliberately jacking up the prices extremely rapidly. Again, from the same story, according to a recent study from the Aspen Institute, households now spend an average of $1,000 a year on their child's primary sport, a 46% increase since 2019. 6 years ago, it would have cost about $500. Now it costs $1,000, and yet it happens incrementally, and so people don't even notice, or they just think, well, gosh, things are more expensive. No, this is deliberately being done to you.
And this is, I mean, that is taking an analysis of all households, including non-sports households. If you actually look at, like, the gymnastics households, if you actually look at, like, lacrosse or travel ball, I am not exaggerating when I say if you are on a travel team, you can blow $8,500 in a four-month season.
Wow.
If you want your child to be allowed to play, to have a chance at a scholarship after high school. Because if you don't have that paid experience, you're not even in consideration or contention. Cheerleading is just as bad, by the way. It's right. Like there's all kinds of sports going on here. And what's happening is that they have done analysis. More Perfect Union today actually released a really great video on the ways that our farmers in middle America are being squeezed by these monopolies and by, like, private equity firms. What happens is farmers in America, there's a certain number of acres that are owned, and there's a certain number of dollars they can charge per, like, bushel of something.
Okay.
And these monopolies have so consolidated at this point that they have calculated exactly how much they can take from a farmer to make sure that they barely survive so that they can't push back. And so they've gotten it to a point where farmers are making less than they've ever made and working harder than they've ever worked, and they're in more debt than they've ever been in. And now we're giving money to, like, Argentina and to not sell our soybeans to China anymore, right? But the same thing is happening in families. These private equity funds, these billionaires have paid McKinsey and Deloitte to do exacting studies to see exactly how much money our households have that they can pull to make sure that we can't push back. They inundate us with all of these statements that we have to have our kids in all of these different activities, and that we have to have this and we have to have that or they won't be successful later in life. And you need your refrigerator to work, and you need a car, and you need your parents to be taken care of. And they raise their prices and raise their prices in lockstep, because when you're colluding, there is no competition. There's no reason to lower a price.
Right.
They are working together and no one is stopping them. And it is horrifying.
It really is. Here's another good transition. Speaking of farming, folks, you thought it bad already. Okay, we've explained the ER death rates, maximizing. We've explained the way they're kicking old people out of nursing homes and taking advantage of kids who just want to play sports. What about pesticides? This is so crazy to me, and you just sent this article over. Explain this one to us from Friends of the Earth, published 2 days ago. 1 year later, toxic pesticides still present in Target's baby food. Lab tests reveal residue from 16 highly hazardous pesticides in one bottle of baby food from Target's Good and Gather line. 16 different pesticides in one jar of baby food.
And 10 of them are banned in the European Union and all of our sister countries, but not here in America. We love them. We love them. They're our favorite, right? And another one of them had 24 pesticides in it, by the way. It's horrifying. So a couple years ago, Friends of the Earth took samples of a bunch of jars of baby food from Target so that they could make sure it wasn't just like a one-off. They took them from different stores and different places, and they sent them off to a lab to see how many of these jars of baby food would test positive for toxic pesticides. And it was significant. So they went back to Target and said, please fix this. They've had a couple years to fix it. And when they tested them this time, it had gone up.
Oh my God.
So what we're seeing now is that, and I chronically say this, we have become a country that supports MAHA. We want healthy kids. We want childhood obesity to come down. We want to end the chronic disease epidemic. We know for a fact farmers that work with pesticides have a 1,000% increased risk of lymphoma. They have the highest cancer rate of any profession in the United States,
yep.
Right? They are dying of lymphoma and leukemia more than any other job. These are the people that have food coming straight out of the ground. These are the people that have meat they can slaughter in their own barn. And they are dying of these horrifying diseases, right? Simultaneously, we're losing 63 family farms a day in the United States because farmers are either dying or retiring, and nobody else will go into it because it's so consolidated, right? And so we know these pesticides are scary. We know this is a consolidated monopolistic environment. And now we have baby food riddled with pesticides. So what's our government going to do? We have a plan. Are you ready?
Oh, God.
We're going to include an amendment to the 2026 Appropriations Bill to fund our government to give pesticide immunity to the agrochemical corporations so no American can sue them. That's what we're going to do.
Yep. And, of course, our audience will be aware of the way that this already happens with vaccines. They're now doing it with pesticides. Pesticide immunity bill could strip away legal rights from WisnerBaum.com. Two U.S. states have already enacted industry-backed laws while federal legislation advances, creating unprecedented corporate shields against legal accountability. So you can no longer sue pesticide companies for the negative consequence of pesticides like atrazine.
So if we're supporting MAHA, right, we say we're a country that wants these healthy kids. Do you know what Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s largest verdicts that made him famous were for? They were for suing Bayer Monsanto for the largest verdicts ever awarded for killing farmers.
Yep.
That is what Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s life's work was dedicated to. And now, with him as the head of HHS, we're going to sneak pesticide immunity into an appropriations bill while he's busy not suing them, right?
Right.
So that no one can ever advocate for those farmers again.
It's just, again, it's just insanity piled upon insanity. After contentious U.S. committee vote, Bayer and allies, a step closer to new federal protections for pesticides. A group of U.S. lawmakers on Tuesday, this is from back in July of 2025, failed to beat back a provision in a congressional appropriations bill that would have helped protect pesticide makers from being sued and could hinder state efforts to warn about the risks of pesticide products. They are actually going in and making it more difficult to protect yourself from pesticides. I mean, it is just terrible. I don't even have words for the ridiculousness that we're experiencing
now,
here.
I like to talk about hope because I talk about hope a lot, even though I seem like the little fairy of doom. We're going to actually give some more cookies to a Democrat today.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Cory Booker.
Okay.
Cory Booker introduced the Pesticide Accountability Act. And
I'm
he can't
for
get
it.
Any co-sponsors.
Oh, my God.
But he introduced an act that said that would end this pesticide immunity effort. And it would say that all of these pesticide companies can be held accountable for anyone they kill, anyone they harm, anyone they maim.
It's one of the things that, like, as much shit as we talk about California and Europe, you know, they have protections against this. Like we were just saying, a lot of the toxic pesticides found right. in baby foods are banned in the European Union. Is this not something that we can come together on? I know, you know, I'm as bad as anybody about demonizing the left, but like, if we can come together on this, I'm for it. There are certain things that should cross party lines. Protecting our food supply from pesticides, protecting our children from PFAs, is that not something we can come together on?
This is something that not only do we have almost unanimous support for across party lines. When I say unanimous, I mean like 98% of Americans don't think they should have immunity. Like 96% of Americans don't want excessive pesticides in their food very, very explicitly, right? Everyone says that they would buy organic if they could. But a lot of people don't know organics are covered in pesticides too, unless they're greenhouse grown, right? And so what we see is an amazing opportunity for unanimity. Except that Bayer Monsanto and the rest of the agrochemical companies have an absolute chokehold on our Congress. And it is so much a chokehold that these farms we were just talking about that are going out of business, these 63 farms a day, that's because every farm subsidy bill that gets issued, more and more, the agrochemical companies have lobbied to tie the subsidies for these farmers to paying them.
Right.
So you give a subsidy to a farmer and the only thing they can buy is pesticides.
Wow.
Can't buy anything else with it, right? And that's because these corporations have too much influence, all the influence over our Congress.
Wow.
It has to end.
Well, Tiffany, you've done it again. you've taken me I didn't think I could be less hopeful, and my God, is it bad. But no, it is hopeful because people are aware of this. You're aware of it. We're spreading
word
about it.
We can back Cory Booker's bill. We can call our reps and try to get somebody to co-sponsor that. We can fix this.
And that's what we
need. We have time.
People don't know about this. If they knew about it, they would be on our side. If they knew about it, they would stand up against it. This could be an extremely popular political stance if politicians would come on our side, abandon the agrochemical companies, and stop the pesticides from poisoning our children. Is that not victory waiting to be seized? Tiffany Cianci at the Vino Mom on X. Thank you so much for being with us once again.
Always my pleasure.
Incredible.
Everything we do is the tip of the spear. You are the tip of the spear when you spread the word, when you pray for us, when you buy products. So listen, we have shortfalls, and they're not even that big, but I understand the economy's totally shot. Our audience is as big as it's ever been. And back when the economy was going and we had an audience this big, we'd be in high cotton and I'd be able to expand. Right now, I'm just trying to stay on air. So I need you to make the decision to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and take advantage of the biggest sale ever. Black Friday came early. That's right. Black Friday has come early. We always launch it the weekend after before Black Friday. Be a little different. Black Friday comes early. Mega sale, the biggest sale ever. Buy one, get one free on all supplements. The Irish Sea Moss, the Ultramethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Bovine Colostrum, and dozens of other amazing products. This is the biggest sale we've ever done. Ends Friday, November 28th. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement for free. Normally, it's buy one bottle of Irish Sea Moss, another bottle of Irish Sea Moss, or buy one bottle of Methylene Blue, another bottle. No, this is add any supplement to your cart and get another supplement free. You can mix and match any of our amazing supplements together. Don't miss out. This offer ends Friday, November 28th. Visit thealexjonesstore.com today and fuel your body, mind, and power the info war. Take advantage of this amazing deal while supplies last. And here's another little tidbit that makes this a total loss leader when you use it. If you go to alexjonesapp.com and download the Droid or Apple app for free that are the top apps, just in the last few months we launched it, folks at Bigly, the Alex Jones channel, the Alex Jones network, it's the same shopping cart on the app, your desktop or phone. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top. So everybody should get the app and should definitely use that. But if you want to support us more, get more funds in, then don't use the app and get the additional 20% off. I'm serious. It's like a form of a donation. When I tell you that I need your support, it's absolutely critical. This is the most critical time.